Blog Talk Radio.
This is the place that does not allow that. Welcome to Intelligent Black Society. Let's see if we can open up the phone line here. Caller, you're on live with the BlackChannel.net radio. Caller, going once, going twice. You're on live with the BlackChannel.net radio. Okay, they've been abducted. Caller from the 217, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Assalamu alaikum, Aki.
Black first, brother, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Calling from Mobile, Alabama. What's today's topic going to be on?
Okay. If you've been listening for more than a few minutes, know not to ask that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just tuned in.
Okay. Well, I'll not put you back on hold then. We'll see if you can come back and tune in a little bit later. Caller from 612, you're on live Black Channel.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on live.
Hi, Jason. I just tuned in, so I don't even know what the topic is yet.
Okay. It's officially Freebase Friday on the BlackChannel.net radio, and everybody started the party early. For those of you who are on the line, if you are listening, if you press the number one again, ostensibly it will take you out of the host queue and just leave you listening. So, by all means, definitely at least give it a try. We'll see what she does. Caller from the 404, you're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, 404 got abducted as soon as they were invited on. Now, do you see how hard it is just to get a telephone call on here? And then you all wonder why black people are in the condition that we're in today. Just thought I'd want to swirl that around for a couple of moments. Caller from 954, you're on live Black Channel.
Hey, Jason, this is Dion calling out of Fort Lauderdale. How you doing?
Black first, brother, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I think part of the problem is when it comes down to us as Africans having this inability to actually want to compete. I think it comes from just being, in my opinion, from just psychologically being downtrodden by individuals, you know. Like, for example, like you go to Jamaica, you go to Haiti. If you've been into any of those countries many times, you always have other people who run your country, you know. And it's funny because, you know, most of the time I've always heard, you know, my family, like I said, like my family is Jamaican. And when I was visiting there at one point, I've heard a lot of, you know, I would say negative criticism from Jamaicans. But also, I also know that ironically, they always praise the United States for all of its achievements. But at the same time, you know, most of their import, most of the stuff they have brought to them are brought in by the Chinese. You know, it's all, you know, most of the export, right down to the toothpaste, toiletries, they're from the Chinese. And I think what it is really more so with us is that we have allowed ourselves to stop wanting to be able to learn for ourselves. And we've gotten used to being catered to in some form, if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah, but here's the problem I have with it, is that this isn't really new for Africans, though. It'd be different if this, you know, something relatively recent. But the problem is, it's not. It's not something, you know, really new for us. We've been doing this for a long time. We've been doing this for a very, very long time. We have allowed people to do that because, let's just be honest, can we be honest? Black people enjoy, I mean, I can't say that we're satisfied or content. We actually enjoy it. We define our existence by it, and I don't I'm not really so sure if it's because I'm not so sure if that's a recent advent is what I'm trying to say. I'm not so sure if that's a recent thing.
Well, no,
because
it isn't,
folk
actually.
In Jamaica, you take a look at Jamaicans. I mean, you can look at how many people got upset with me when I said that black males in Jamaica are always complimenting themselves and congratulating themselves on how weed is out taking it. Have you ever heard a population?
Have you ever been to Jamaica?
No, what's your point?
Because most people, the majority of Jamaicans don't smoke weed.
Okay, did I say that the majority
of people smoke weed?
Excuse me. Excuse me, sir. Please tell me at what point that I said that the majority of Jamaicans smoke weed. Tell me right now. When did I say that?
I didn't say that. I said they don't.
Okay, you stopped me while I was talking. You stopped me while I was talking and said the majority don't smoke weed. At what point did I say the majority did?
You did not.
Okay, then why did you say that?
Because some people would take that as offensive.
You cut me off while I was talking so that you could argue against something that nobody even said. Why did you do that?
Well, I wasn't being argumentative.
Okay, it's not about being argumentative. You were just being delusional. Who said that most of them smoke weed? And you said, wait a minute. Most of them don't, okay? While you're having your hallucination, who said that they did? Who said
Jason,
that?
Jason, I apologize. I respectfully apologize.
You know, I'm not accustomed to so many black men who act like black women. I'm just not used to that. I'm just not used to it at all. Now, as far as have I been to Jamaica, because this is a thing that people try to trot out a lot, and I want to give you all some advice about when people try to use the have you been there line. You know what, Dion? I haven't ever been to a whorehouse either, but I know they have prostitutes there. I know they have more prostitutes than they have window washers there. And I've never set foot in a whorehouse. I've never set foot, I shouldn't say in a police station. I've never set foot in a police station in your city, but I'm pretty sure they got more cops than they do computer programmers. I'm pretty sure of that. I'm just reading and guessing, but I think if I rail against the police department and the 954 area code, that I'm pretty sure that they've got pretty much their record the same as every other police department in America. I'm pretty sure of it without me going there. Because if the only way that you can speak about something is if you've, quote, been there or done that, then by definition, can't do drugs because I've never done drugs before. I can't speak against drugs because I've never done them. And I can't speak against going to jail because I've never been there. And I can't speak against going to whorehouses because I've never been there. So how can I talk so authoritatively on all these things if you've never been there?
Well, that wasn't really my point of what I was trying to say. I was actually trying to support you to say the reason why some people may have gotten offended with you was because, you know, because of the fact of the matter, you may have used the term weed smoking and constant weed smoking. Now, I personally am not offended by it, but the reason why I asked you had you been there, because if you had been there, you would have probably taken a different stance, even in the discussion.
No, I wouldn't.
In the aspect of discussing Jamaica.
No, I wouldn't. I would have said it exactly the way I did, because what I said was factually accurate. What you're saying is people got offended. Forget you. If the truth offends you, damn you. We need some black men who will say, you know what? If you have a problem with the truth being stated forthright and earnestly and without apology, the problem is you, not the truth. The truth is just fine. If the truth offends you, then it's you with the problem, not the truth. Now the majority.
Well, I see where you're coming from with that.
Okay, I've got people in my chat room who are from Jamaica, and they agree with every single word I said.
Okay.
You can take a look at how impoverished black males in particular are in Jamaica. Take a look at how impoverished black people are in Jamaica. That is the result, a strong factor of that. Everybody, nobody in Jamaica's got no money, but everybody knows how to get some weed.
Well, it was everywhere.
Excuse me. Are you trying to compare the poverty in Jamaica to the poverty in America? Because you just said it everywhere. Now, you just said a few moments ago, well, I was agreeing with
myself. No. I was talking about the weed. It's everywhere. It's easy to obtain.
Yes, I just... Are you deaf? I said that.
Apparently, I didn't hear you.
Okay, well, maybe you need a new phone, or we got a listening comprehension issue going on here. This is the second time that I've said, well, yeah, that's what I just said, and you tried to argue against it, and then I said, well, no, that's what I just said. This is getting very unusual in this phone call.
David, I'm about arguing against you.
Stop the mollies before you call, y'all. Please don't do that. But bottom line is that the problem is that they are one of the most desperately poor places in the world, and yet they got one of the world's highest tourist rates on Earth either, and yet they have not been able to parlay that incredible amount of tourism, the great weather, all the attributes that they have, all the positive characteristics they have, all the assets they have been unable to parlay those into a world-class economy. And I tell you that a major factor of that is because the identity of the builders, that is the males in Jamaica, is Eman Babondis. Even for the ones who are not doing it, that is the atmosphere that they are being raised in. That's the mindset. That is Jamaican male's identity. Show me where your Jamaican multinational corporation is you know of that makes anything that
there
you can buy today. Anything. Anything. A razor. A damn roll of paper towels.
That's what you mean. But when it comes to, even when it comes down to the tourist resorts, Jamaicans don't own them.
And that's the problem.
It's usually owned by someone outside of the country.
And
that's even like you were saying.
And why do they not own them?
I think part of what it is. Clearly, just to put it up together, I really don't know, but I would definitely say that it has something to do with ambition. Not knowing how to be authoritative towards your own, you know, even in your own land. You know, I don't know the specific words you may be looking for, but as far as I see it, that's just not being able to just be a man.
Now,
and actually
what is it that makes,
take charge
it
of what
makes
you
a
own?
Man not to assert himself on his own land? What is it that does that?
What causes them not to do that? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes, what causes them not to assert themselves on their own land?
I think part of that is it has a lot to do with generation. For example, if you look at the original culture, a lot of things you have now is, like I say, and I'm probably going to agree with you a little bit with this, is that it comes back to most of women there are single. I mean, most of the families are single home families. Usually it's the mother, and it's usually two or three children. Same thing you find in the U.S. And what I think what it comes down to is that you end up with a culture breakdown when it comes down to the lack of males. I don't know the best way of putting this together, but basically say is that you no longer have the assertive or what you would call the strong man in their society. Even the same thing even in America or anything in Africa. And if you just dug it, we already know. If you look through history, you always see that anytime we've actually had men who have ever stood up to the British, so to speak, or just white or Anglos anyway, what has always happened to them? They've always been killed off. And instead of refreshing those men, it has just gone to the incline of where you see there are no men who are willing to stand up to this form of oppression. Let alone has gotten to the point you don't even acknowledge it anymore.
People should go ahead and take a look into who's doing the building in Jamaica. And at
it's
some
everyone
point,
else but Jamaicans.
At some point, you are supposed to be offended and you are supposed to be upset when somebody is going to build on your land. You should be upset when people who look nothing like you, know nothing about you, and aren't really concerned about you are doing all the build where you are. That's supposed to offend you. Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda were inspired by the fact that Americans in 91 built a huge military base in Kuwait. When you build a military base like that, what you're saying is we're not leaving. We're not going anywhere. And that was when bin Laden said, oh, hell no, yes, you are. You are not taking over our land. This is ours. And in Jamaica, black men do not pride themselves on what they've built. Oh, yeah, they ain't built nothing. But, man, they sure do pride themselves, and they are uber cool for how much weed they can toke on. Now, that, they will break their arms patting themselves on the back for, even the ones who don't do it directly. It's in the culture now. It's part of their cultural identity. It's part of their cultural identity now. And that's the part that ought to be bothering people more than anything else, is because look at what they're doing. You don't see them being mortally offended by the fact that they're more known for smoking weed than anything else. They're not even known for selling it. They're not even known for being a major place that sells weed. They're not even known for, they're just all known for being weed heads. And what I'm saying is that the reason they call them stereotypes is because there's an element of truth to it. That's why. When the only thing that people know for certain that you can get easily in Jamaica is some weed. They don't know if you find a computer programmer. They don't know if you can find an architect. They don't know if you can find an engineer. They don't know if you can find a manufacturing plant. But what we do know, you can find some weed. We know that. That is a crucial and deadly problem when that is what you and your people are known for. And that doesn't seem to make any type of impression. And that offended a bunch of people. Nobody was ever able to disprove it, and they can't because of the truth. They just wanted to be offended because, well, I didn't like the way you said the truth. You shouldn't be saying the truth about Jamaica like that. You shouldn't be saying that. But they're desperately poor, and the only thing that they've shown that they can cultivate well is marijuana. And they can't even make a living off of that. How bad do you have to be that all you can talk about is we got great weed and you can't even make any money off of it? You're all, who in the hell ever heard of a whole place with a bunch of drug dealers that are dirt ass poor? Is there anybody out there? Is there anybody out there who ever thought of themselves as a Jamaican kingpin? Anybody? Anybody who wants to be the biggest drug dealer in Jamaica? Anybody? The biggest, richest drug dealer in Jamaica. Even if you were, I forget his name. He got the funny last name that they were from Jamaica. I forget what his name was off the top of my head. It was him and his dad. Even if you are like them, it'll come to me here in just a moment. But even if you were like them, that wasn't anything to write home about. It wasn't like they were major figures in the world's cartels. They weren't. Even selling drugs, they're not even, they didn't have anything major cracking. And they didn't have nearly the anti-drug laws they got here. And they couldn't even make that into an empire. But they did use a lot of it. That guy's name, Coke.
Yeah, that was named Coke. The one.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. I was trying to think off the top of my head. I was about to say, because I kept thinking his name was Coke, and I was like, yeah, Coke.
I think that was 2010 or 11.
Yeah, and people were
basically, they came in and invaded Jamaica and killed like 140 something people looking for one man.
Never should have been allowed to happen either, by the way. But
you would think the Jamaican government would not have allowed that to happen.
Well, the Jamaican people shouldn't have allowed that to happen. The Jamaican people shouldn't have allowed that. I mean, they should have them like Mogadishu. The United States came in looking for one man there, too. That was the last time I ever saw Africans assert themselves in any type of serious way. That was the last time it happened. And even they get their thanks to bin Laden. That's what we do. I'll let you have the last word.
Okay, thanks. Well, I will say this here is that I hope that we as blacks, as Africans, as you're saying it, will understand and see what the real threat is in the world for us at this time. And part of what it is right now, we have to learn science. I mean, it's sad when you realize that we do not even know how to design a weapon. History is very important. Because if you learn your history, you'll see exactly why you're in the situation that you are in now. You know, it's not really hard to explain, but we can go a lot further if we learn to pull our resources together at this point.
Well, that starts with the desire. Where is the idea? I mean, Mossadegh said these are our resources. China said these are our resources. Saudi Arabia said these are our resources. Africans are tripping over diamonds wherever they go and looking for the nearest white person to give it to, because in the mind of black people, Africans around the world, nothing has value if a white person didn't tell us it did.
That's true.
We would overlook all the diamonds, all gold, all the platinum, all tin, all those minerals in Africa. As far as Africans are concerned, they are worthless except to redeem them for a pat on the head from white people. That's the only purpose of money, to find the nearest white person and get him to smile that you brought him what you have. And it's just the truth. We bring our daughters. Ain't that right, Rihanna? Ain't that right, Beyonce, Lil' Kim, Foxy Brown? Ain't that right, Pam Grier? With Quentin Tarantino just cheesing.
Mm-hmm.
We bring our, until they become grandmothers, they're looking at white people to smile at them. Damn grandmothers acting like grandchildren. We bring our sons, ain't that right, Final Four, NCAA, Chris Brown. When did Chris Brown make bail, by the way? Anybody hear about that?
Yeah, I thought he was still in jail.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me check. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's being held.
And U.S.
Without,
Marshals hasn't.
Yeah, he's being
U.S.
held.
U.S. Marshals detained him, hasn't.
He's being held without bail. Oh.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. He's being held without bail. Kind of reminds me of somebody else, Chad Ochocinco. Yeah, when you're black, first offense, yeah, you get held without bail. See, there's a door for white men, and then there's a door for you. But Chris Brown didn't want to talk about resources either. Chris Brown, when he got out of jail the first time, do you all remember the first thing that Chris Brown did? I do remember the first thing that Chris Brown did 5 years ago when he got out of jail the first time. Does anybody remember?
No, what did he do?
First thing Chris Brown did was he went back to the music studio, and do you know the first thing he did when he went there?
Let me guess, he made a recording or something?
He made a song for Rihanna. I think the name of the song was Changed Man. That's the first thing that he thought about doing when he got out of jail. He did not think that I need to go warn my brothers and rage against the system and put together a catchy tune that overthrows the system. He wanted to figure out, how can I get back in bed with Rihanna? That's where his folks went to. And he's in jail tonight, not because he displeased Rihanna. If he had been using his popularity to reach against the system, it's unlikely that he even would be in jail tonight. He would have been focused on other things than what was happening at that rehab. But this is what we do. Thank you very much for checking in with us. Do please call us again. This is the BlackChannel.net radio. Caller from the 702, you're on live, the Black Channel.
Oh, Jason, it's Devontae calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
What's on your mind, brother?
Well, I'm just listening to the conversation, and it seems clear where everything that's happening in the world, America, all the Americas, not just the United States of America, Africa. And it just, I mean, it was said clearly back in the South when blacks did get their civil rights. I mean, when they were opening businesses and starting to make gangs, a lot of black people just looked at it like, you know, white ice is colder than black ice, which, you know, logically doesn't make any sense, but that's the way they look at it. If it's coming from someone that looks like me, it's worthless, unless that's the only way I could get it. So if this is not the only way I could get this, and there's a white person producing it, then I'm going to go to a white person and get it. And that's just the way that it seems. I thought it was just here in the United States, but I'm realizing that's not the case. I think it's that way worldwide. And I don't know. I mean, I understand some of the history that I do know about Africa. It seemed like Africans were very, how do you say, you know, I'll call them humanitarians. They're very much, you know, human beings. And in that context, that's a lovely thing from at that time when people weren't warring and competing for resources. But in this time, I mean, it's necessity that you understand that's not going to work.
Well, you said that Africans are humanitarian.
Well, the way you look at our history, it seemed like we were willing to, you know, accept anyone. And in the early
ages of Africa. Africans are humanitarian, except when it comes to each other. Now, that's where the humanitarianism flies out the window when it comes to each other. All of a sudden, it's Rwanda, it's Sudan, it's Somalia, it's Ethiopia, it's Uganda. All of a sudden, here we go. And that's because white people told you not to like each other. We put a value on what they think more than anything else. Not even to the extent that we even resist being put in a trick bag. We don't even resist that. So that humanitarianism, you're quite correct. We've all seen it, except with each other. Africans,
true.
I mean, you heard the young fella Eli who was calling me before, and he wanted to make sure that we understood that him being from Togo, oh, he can't deal with the Nigerians, he can't deal with Chinese, he can't deal with any of them. He can't deal with Ghanaians, he can't deal with Liberians, he can't deal with any of those people. He made it very clear, if you remember that phone call, when I told him about going up there, oh, no, you think I can deal with them? Hey, we can't deal with any of them. That shows you know nothing. I tell you all, this is Pan-Africanism. It's true. No. Not what I'm talking about. That's not Pan-Africanism. What Eli was talking about, that's Pan-Africanism. What they're doing in Zimbabwe, bringing in the Chinese, that is Pan-Africanism today. What they're doing in the Sudan, identifying themselves as Arabs, that's Pan-Africanism today. What they're doing in Ghana, making it hell for American blacks to be able to patriate to the country, that's Pan-Africanism today. That's Pan-Africanism. What I'm talking about is some ideal of changing what Pan-Africanism currently is, but that is Pan-Africanism today, being anti-African. Pan-Africanism today is being anti-African. That's Pan-Africanism today. But nobody wants to say it like that.
No, they don't. And like I said, being in Las Vegas and it's an international city, I work, and I'm around a lot of people from different parts of Africa, from all different parts of Africa, from all different parts of the Americas and that are black people. And I realized something talking to some of them, and I don't even go into deep conversation, but just mentioning certain words that terrified of just certain topics they are. And they start smiling and, oh, no, and that's not the case. And I'm just like, hey, I didn't even go into that like that. I just mentioned it. And it's weird. And I was having a conversation with an older gentleman I work with. He's from down south. And, you know, come to find out that he's been tried and convicted 2 times of manslaughter. And the way he came dumping his chest, I wasn't really interested in talking to him. I'm just sitting there, and I'm a smoker, so I'm sitting in the smoke area smoking. And he's just like, you know, when I was younger, I was fighting, and I'd be doing, and he's just pumping his chest. And then, you know, and I'm wondering, why the heck is he just over here, you know, bragging about how great of a fighter he is? So I started asking him questions. I was like, so who are you fighting? Oh, you know, anybody that gave me trouble. So who are these people? Oh, you know, people in my town and da-da-da. And, you know, why were you fighting? Oh, because, you know, they would give me a hard time, and I don't take no mess, blah, blah. And I'm like, so, okay. So what color were these people? What color were these people? They were black. Okay, so what about when the police came and get you for that manslaughter charge and you're still here? He didn't like that. He did not like
that.
So
he fought.
He
fought.
He didn't talk to me anymore.
Until the police showed up. Now, then the fight was gone. He was willing to fight the whole world until the police showed up. You know, whenever you meet somebody like that, But there's two questions you need to ask. Number one, you need to ask them, yeah, what color were the people you were fighting? But the other thing you need to ask them is how much money did they have? Because you don't see his kind of street Negro bragging about beating up millionaires and billionaires. The boss of the company can walk up on him and smack him in the face and call him boy, and he'll just stand there. Now, you do it, and all of a sudden he gets brave, but how much money the person he was beating up had, and that goes out the window real quick.
Well, just to add this, Jason, while I was sitting there, I realized why he was there. He went to go talk to some gentleman that works in Hornet Culture. Well, I see all the time. I don't know his name, though. But he comes back around. He goes, oh, yeah, that's why I was here. I was waiting for Dave because he's going to do me a favor. I'm like, I mean, I'm just listening and just talk. And he's like, yeah, because I needed Dave. He's going to do me this, and it's going to really help me out, you know. And then he, like, thanked me for helping him out because he had issues with his grandson. And that's why the one time I did talk to him, like, he had some sense. And I gave him the links to Dr. Umar Johnson so they wouldn't put his grandson in resource class. And his daughter took it, and she did what she was supposed to do. But that's it. And then, like, as soon as Dave walked off, and he like, turns, and he's like, this big, like, circle with his arms and his huge smile, and he goes, and Dave is white. And I'm like, what are you telling me that for? Because I guess he realized, like, because he's seen, you know, my bosses or whoever come up to me, and they're like, oh, Devontae, you know, what's going on? You're doing good? Or and I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm doing great. And then they're like, oh, what, can I do anything for him? I'm like, why are you asking me that? I don't know. What do you think? There's something wrong. And I'll just like, okay, well, see you. And I'll walk off. And you'll see me do stuff like that. And I guess he's sitting there and like, oh, he's not, you know, he's not friendly or he's not. I'm like, no, I say hi. I say bye. We have a little conversation to have. I'll have it. But if you're just doing the I'm your buddy thing, I'm kind of like, hey, all right, cool. See you later. I don't even know what you're talking about. I mean, I haven't shown you that I have any problems or issues. And you just, but it seems like a lot of the people around me, especially white people, they want to come up to me and offer me their assistance for no reason. And I'm like, okay, no, I don't know what you're talking about. See you later. Because I'm like, why do I need assistance? Oh, let me get there for you. I don't really need you to get there for me. I was like 5 steps ahead of you. Why are you running to get the door for me? And he's like one of the people that clean the hotel. So when he sees me around, I guess he must have seen those actions. And he's like, yeah, and then I'm like, why are you telling me? I've never shown you that I had any issues with anybody of any race. If anybody speaks to me, I speak to them. And, you know, if anybody passes me along and I make contact with them, I say hello. But I'm not trying to be that interested in people because I don't know them, and a lot of them are not that interesting. I'm just not that interested in, you know, doing, knee slapping and hand jerking and, you know, running in dozens and all that other stuff. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, but the problem is that older black males, black men, I posted this online earlier today in response to someone else, and what I've always tried to teach you all, black women do not encounter racism as much or the same way as black men. Why is that? Because black women have something to bargain with that black men do not have. Black women can bargain in a job against their sexuality. Men can't do that. Black men in particular cannot do that. We can't get the manager to take it easy on us by showing some cleavage. We can't do that. We can't do any of those things. So what does the black male have to do? The black male has to become the jigaboom. He has to be always smiling when the white folks show up. Never let them ever. We don't even want the white folk to give a cross look because he's not the best at his job. He's just hanging on for dear life. He's not the best, and there is nothing that he can do on his own to make himself more valuable to that job or more desired by another one. So when black males get older, they get more quiet, more humble, and more subservient to white folk because he doesn't have anything else to bargain with but his humility. That's all he's got. I'll let you have the last word, buddy.
Well, gentlemen, always, Jason, and great broadcast, and I think this topic needs to be talked about a lot more, a whole lot more.
Thank you very much for joining us, Brother Black First. As always, caller from the 757, you're on live with BlackChannel.net Radio.
Hey, Jason, this is Caller Genesis. What's going on? First time calling the show.
But Caller, if you're on speaker, you might want to take it off because you're echoing a bit.
Okay, I'm not on speaker. I've been talking away from the phone.
How okay, I'm gonna say you're in a big, because that's what you. The problem is you're in a big house. That's what it is.
Yep.
Y'all try out those huts they got going on over there. they're building some skyscraper huts. You might want to try one of those.
Yeah, like I said, you know why I called them, mate. And we, you know, as you know, you've been reading my posts. I'm very, very into Pan-Africanism. I've been doing it for 22 years now, studying Africa, studying African-American and relationship with Africans and African-Americans. I have a novel that's going to be published in another month called Journey to the Promised Land. It's about the exodus to Liberia, okay? It's a historical novel based on an actual event, the exodus of 1878 from Charleston, South Carolina to Liberia. And so I just got a from a publisher. He said the novel was very, very good. And they're going to basically see if they can pitch it to movie producers. You know, so I'm just, you know, that's just in the background. I said, it's that good. I'm not bragging. I didn't, you know, the first time I got credit for my work, and I just said, okay, you know, I'm very humbled by it. It took me 2 years to write it. And so that's that. I don't mean to plug the book or anything. I just want to put that, give a little background of who I am and why I'm calling. You're absolutely 100% right. Your critique lately of Africa. As a matter of fact, I added you to that Africland page, and I hope you all like it, so you can join in the conversation over there. Let me give you a background about Pan-Africanism. Pan-Africanism was born in America. It wasn't born in Africa. Pan-Africanism was born among African black intellectuals in the 1700s and the 1800s that lived in Portugal, the urban areas of England, the United States, Boston, and these black people saw that there was racial oppression, or racial oppression based on race, which was the slave trade, and eventually the domination of Africa. So therefore, it was a worldview based on the fact that, look, the one thing we have in common that we're all black. Forget the fact that I was a Zulu. Forget the fact that I was a Mandingo. Forget the fact that I was a Yoruba. All that means absolutely nothing. Once men are chained together, they become brothers. That's the genesis of Pan-African. Once Africans were herded to those castles and from different tribes and backgrounds of different languages, and they were put on those ships, they knew one thing. It didn't matter what they were before. See, this is the difference between Africa and Europe. Europe had thousands of years to develop like that. When Rome conquered most of the naturalized, the known world, tribes that were warring with each other would marry with each other, bond with each other, and that's what built Europe. So Europeans knew the fact that they came to a part of the world that was still tribalized, and they took advantage of that. Now, that's no excuse for Africans, because I asked the question, if Africans tell us that the reason why the slave trade went on because of guns, you mean tell me you claim to have Africans were master craftsmen, they were bronzemen, they're all these things. Now, if Africans were forced into the slave trade, you mean tell me something simple as a gun and a cannon Africans couldn't make so they didn't have to be manipulated by Europeans? Think about that. Something as simple to make as a gun and a cannon, you know, as simple as gunpowder, is the reason why you let millions leave the continent. So therefore, African Americans do have a right, if we have a chip on our shoulder of something about Africa and stuff like that, Africans need to be more empathetic towards that. That being said, the Pan-African movement was born here in the United States and in the black church. Other people talk about the black church. The African Methodist Episcopal Church and the African Missionary Baptist Church began a theme in the right after the American Revolution was formed. People start calling themselves Africans. We're the African people. You know, just like you had E. Pluribus Unum, out of many come one, a European. Most people call themselves, white people call themselves Scott, British, Scott Irish. The black people call themselves African as an identification with Africa. Now, it wasn't an identification with tribal Africa. It was the idea that we could build the black communities that were marooned here in America, call themselves African communities, a new African, a modern African, a contemporary African. So therefore, that idea that we could build Africa to a contemporary level through education, through hard work, and through
the ideas of the Magna Carta, the ideas of democracy, the ideas of enlightenment. Well, let's bring those things to the continent of Africa to pull our brothers and sisters out of darkness. Now, that right there, right, what I just said, is the fundamental problem between African Americans and Africans. Because we see the problem as, look, we're all black. Forget about this. Let's build for the modern world, like you were saying. Let's compete against Europeans to build better buildings. Let's build a better civilization. Let's build industry. The Africans, what they do is they don't care about competing with Europeans. It's all about Nigerians, as long as they're one up on the Ghanaians, as long as the Igbo group is one up on the Yorubas, you know, as long as the Hausas in Nigeria are one up on the Igbos. You know, it's like the idea of being an African means that you're competing against people who are non-African. Africans, I ask the question, if you believe in Pan-Africa, what are you still doing members of the British Commonwealth? And also, if colonial was so bad, so why does the African country still maintain the language, cultural, diplomatic, political ties with their former colonizers? Why is that? You know, this is something I don't understand. So when people, African Americans, dreamy eyes talk about Pan-Africanism, and they go right into the lion's den, they don't understand the danger they're in. These countries are still basically colonies of Europe. That's why you see European men in Kenya and everything hugged up with 13 and 12-year-old African girls, and nobody does anything about it. Because Africa is still, Europeans still consider Africa as a part of them. Nothing has absolutely changed. The idea of Pan-Africanism is basically rejected by the mass of Africans because it goes against the idea of, oh, we're all one people and color envy. Only Africans are the fools that believe that. You don't see Africans colonizing China. You don't see Africans running Asia. Who do you see running Asia? Asians. Singapore made it a point. Okay, let's build a society. They invite the Chinese in. They invite Nigerians in. They brought other Asians in. Why? Because they know eventually they're the same race. Same thing in Hong Kong. Same thing in Malaysia. Okay, the tensions between the Malays and the Chinese, but eventually you're Asian. You look a bunch alike. You have a lot in common. So that's something to build upon. But Africans, just the opposite. The Africans will reject, the Hutus will reject the Tutsi. You're both Africans, but you brought the ideology that the white man put here that you're different. You know? And so this is what the problem is. And so I wanted to just open with that and see if you want to.
Well, that's a good analysis of it there. In the case of China, you had a huge number of people, but that coming out of World War II, they quickly got their hands on nuclear weapons.
Right.
Once that occurred, conquering them was no longer an option. Japan has always been an occupied state, so they were already conquered. Didn't have to worry about that. The only thing that left anything on the table were the Koreas and the lower areas like the Philippines and whatnot. But they basically used the economies to subjugate them. And
right.
We're going to go into this in my documentary, 7 a.m. Dr. R. Johnson talks about this, that economic science is a branch of military science, that you
right.
can subjugate people in one of three ways, education, money, or arms. You either teach them to themselves low, you use the economy to make it so even if they want to revolt, they can't, and if they overcome the mind enslavement and the economic constraints, then you start shooting them.
Yeah.
But those
yeah,
are the three branches of
it's constant
and
warfare.
People that was never really required to do that with them to that extent. And Africans,
right.
unfortunately, we got conquered early on. And to be totally honest with you, though, I use the term conquered, but can we just be honest about it? All the Europeans really did was they came in and exploited all the distinctions and all these divisions that were already
exactly.
there. That was all
exactly.
they really did was just exploit what you were already doing, and I'll be damned if they don't still do it to this very day.
You're right. Let me give you an example. Now, I'm heavily involved in the country of Liberia, okay? I have business contacts, and I have a lot of friends, and I've been studying this country, and basically, hopefully, God's willing, I plan to go there this year. Now, I've studied the history of Liberia, as we know, was a country founded by African-Americans, you know, resettled African-Americans on the continent of Africa. And I asked the question to a lot of Liberians, why is it that after all these years, now, Liberia was at one time a prosperous country. You know, what the African-American settlers did there was nothing next to remarkable, but they made one single mistake, you know. They forgot the fact that they came from America and they were slaves at one time. So in the 1940s, they began inviting American businessmen at Firestone and the U.S. military, and they let the U.S. military build military communications and installations, which they used to spy on the rest of the continent, and they used to spy on the Soviet Union. Now, in the 70s, when Liberia was saying, well, Liberia was prospering, and it was getting to the point where, well, look, we're the number one political power brokers in Africa. You know, we're not America's stepchild. And then that's when the United States said, okay, look, let's exploit the division between those Africans that came from came over from America and those so-called indigenous Africans. Now, in Liberian society, people tell me, like Liberians tell me, they said, when we were in school in the 70s, they said, look, there were people that were from African-American descent from Georgia, the ancestors came from Georgia, and those people that came from the hinterland were going to school, and they were acting like brothers. We're all black. We're one black country. The world didn't want to see that. The white man didn't want to see that. They always want to draw a distinctive line. And let me give you an example. This is how you know how white people are. The American media will never show you, like my family's from the South. They moved to South Jamaica, Queens, and Long Island, right, in the late 50s, early 60s, right? There are rows and rows of black houses out there and neighborhoods that were prosperous. Everyone knows about, you know, Long Island, New York area. There's rows and rows of middle-class houses and everything. I have yet to ever see an expose or any image of showing black people that weren't living in New York City, that weren't living in tenement housing or housing projects. Why is this huge section of New York almost ignored? So that goes to show you, this is what they've been doing since the 1800s. There were black people, black communities that lived in Greenwich Village in the early 1800s, moving into parts of Harlem in New York, and even in Brooklyn. Prosperous little communities. You know, when the European immigrants were coming in, there were little prosperous little black communities that stayed to themselves. The media, basically, all they did was, since most white people don't go there and see them for themselves, they'll print stories and pictures of white women, black men sneaking white women into their community. They'll put images of black people being lazy, stealing, and crying, and they'll put reports out there of black men are criminals, stuff like that. Even though these were honorable, hardworking people, images of them painted by the media was less than flattering. And this is why you had outbursts of violence against African-American communities in the 19th century in New York City. It was being the draft riot, okay? White people put the white immigrants or white whoever would take their frustrations out on black people based on the misconception that these people were taking something from them. Even though the black people did all they could, just like Rosewood, just like Black Wall Street, did all they could to avoid contact with white people, they made it seem like black people were always trying to take stuff from white people, stealing from them, taking opportunity, taking all the. So therefore, if you take that same sort of analogy, right, take that to Africa, they're not going to ever show you parts of Africa where there might be a chance where Pan-Africans will work. They'll always basically come in and make it out to the extreme. So if this group don't like this group, well, how do you know? Did you talk to everybody? Did you meet everybody? Could it be that, yeah, there's tension, but the fact that your media and your international media is wanting to exacerbate? Well, yeah, when you come to Europe, right, they will tell you this, but there's also separatist movements in England right now. The Scottish want an independent nation. They basically gloss over Northern Ireland once it's seized, right, Northern Ireland. They don't tell you about the Basque separatists in Spain. Of course, but they'll make you seem like Europe is all perfect. They don't have these problems because the media ignores it and the media doesn't feed into it. Same thing with Yugoslavia. People seem to forget about that. But with Africa, they make it seem like, okay, these people will never get along. And that's because they convinced a lot of Africans that they're different and that their tribal identity and whatever nationality that they created, which is all these boundaries, are created by Europeans. All these countries in Africa were created by colonialists. So why is Africans can't rise above these artificial boundaries and say, look, we have a thing. Why don't we take scientists? If you have enough scientists in your country, send them over to this country right here. If you have extra capital in your country, pull it over here, and let's work together to build the continent. And let that be official, not just talking on the Internet and Facebook, let that be official policy. I do think there's a hope. Nigeria right now is basically getting it, I think, because Nigerian leaders are basically doing a couple things. They're basically
You're more optimistic
to,
than I am, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think like this. Why I think Nigeria is this? Because recently, just happened just this week, Nigerian leaders are listening to what's happening on the internet. They're listening to conversation between ordinary people in Nigeria, intellectuals weighing in, right? Unlike that, Nigeria is not letting the BBC and all the British and New York Times, the only people, control the narrative of their country anymore. Perfect example of what I'm talking about. Recently, there was supposed to be an ECOWAS, which is an economic community of West African states, with the European Union. Now, I was duped. I was believing ECOWAS. Oh, yeah, this community of West African states. Good thing. Now I'm starting to learn a little bit more about it, right? First of all, a lot of these countries like Mali, Burkina Faso, Benin, and Ivory Coast are nothing but extensions of France. So in other words, the French and all these colonists that basically still control the industry in Africa will benefit from a so-called common market in West Africa. Nigeria said, hell no. Nigeria said, we're the big prize here. So in other words, if a French company wants to set up in Ivory Coast, they could flood into our market and kill our industry. So Nigeria backed out. And Ghana, with his puppet, our president, accused Nigeria of bullying. The Nigerian said, look, we're sick and tired of every time people want to pull the Pan-African card and tell us about black unity and everything, but yet all these other countries are always going to their missions in foreign countries talking about Nigeria, trying to spread the word. Even though there's a lot of criminals and scams going on throughout Africa, the media has basically focused on Nigeria. It's all Nigerian. Anytime you see someone get arrested in a drug trafficking bust, the media don't even bother looking at the background of the person. They just say two Nigerians were arrested. That's basically because they want to paint the image of Nigeria as a country full of criminals. Now some people say, oh, it's crime. Yes, we understand that. But who will be behind trying to see the international – who will benefit from the international image of Nigeria going down? It certainly ain't Africans. It certainly ain't black people. It's people that basically don't want to see Nigeria emerge as a world power, which it has.
Yeah,
really,
but as
really
a group, though, as a group, Nigerians want to see that, because when you take a look at some of the cultural things happening, and of course, everything is not, quote, all bad. I mean, you've got cancer patients whose cholesterol goes down. I mean, right. Of course, it's not all bad news, but, for example, as you're aware, the Arabs and Muslims are making major inroads there, usually terroristically, as a matter of fact. I think that there has been a slap on the back of the neck, a wake-up call to Nigerians that, you know, the rest of the world's not your friend, but you've got a group of Nigerians who want to go with it and stuff. And the other thing is, for me, as far as I'm concerned, the mindset that white's right. There are two things that, as far as I'm concerned, are the bellwethers that mark if an African nation is serious, not only about Pan-Africanism, but if they are serious about becoming a world power. First and foremost, do you control your resources by any and all means necessary? Like I say, you may say there's a couple of flowers that may be pointing in the right direction. I haven't seen any springing up yet. Are we talking about ourselves as Africans, or are we talking about ourselves as Nigerians? Because more than anything else, as you know, with things like the League of Nations, with things like the European Union, with things like the 5 points in New York, that was where you started seeing things dissolve. As far as the differences between all these European cultures, that's when you finally saw it dissolve for good. When you started seeing, I mean, of all things, organized crime that did more ethnic mingling for white people in America than anything else. You had Italian gangsters who, you know, outsourced
the nightclub scene.
Yeah, and all the businesses that came built up around that. So that was one of the catalysts that caused them to put that to the side. We do not see a similar thing happening with us as Africans is the problem. And Africanism is a term and a word, but the problem is, like so much in black society, it depends on where you go. And it's not a term that's used in Africa per se. Some young people get it, but the problem is, like I say, it's kind of like with white racism in America, there's so few of them who actually get it that they're statistically insignificant.
Yeah.
Not to say they do not exist. Right. I'm not saying that they don't exist. That would not be true. They do exist, but they don't control the conversation. They don't control
the narrative of Pan-Africanism is pushed aside because for some strange reason, I have no idea why, but the international media basically has too much power over the narrative of Africa. How is it that I'm getting news about Africa from the BBC? What the heck is going on with that? You know, I mean, Al Jazeera paints a better picture, a little bit better picture, but not much, okay? There should be a Pan-African news network, you know? We got 1 billion people on the continent, and you got millions of Africans in the West, in the Western Hemisphere, you know? Why isn't there a global news network that basically, when we have our own journalists write our own stories and showing things and controlling the narrative, you know?
Well, the reason you can't do that is because we don't have the money to do that. You would need to set up a network, something like Al Jazeera. You would have to invest something like $80 or $100 million to set
up
an international news agency. Hell, we cannot build a 10-story building in Africa. Where's the headquarters for your Pan-African News Network going to be? We can't build a damn 10-story building.
You know, you're right about that. I think it's not so much the money because the richest black woman in the world now is a Nigerian lady. And the richest black man is in Nigeria, Aliko Dangote, worth $15 billion.
But do they see themselves as black? But the question is, do they see themselves as black,
or are they just a man and woman living in Nigeria? Let me say this, right? Let me say this. Aliko Dangote, I've listened to him, and that's a good argument. Dangote basically made all his money in Africa. He basically says, look, I'm a Pan-Africanist. He built cement plants, steel plants, sugar plants all throughout Africa. He said he's going to focus on Africa. And he knows Pan-Africanism. If he gets people to see his vision of Pan-Africanism, he's going to make more money. So until Pan-Africanism is tied to wealth and we're building and people see the benefit of it, you know, that's a bridge we have not made possible yet. Right now, most Africans think that free trade with Europe is the way to make money. But if Dangote's theory about Pan-Africanism pans out, right? And let me give you an example. There's a lot of – Dangote is more opposed by Nigerians and Africans than he is around the world. He's celebrated. He's a hero to Black America. But in Africa, they're like – they're throwing all kinds of hate at him, you know? Why? Because of envy. There are people that want to stop Dangote, people like Dangote from rising and everything and stuff like that. So they use Africans saying, oh, well, he's a monopoly. Oh, he's this, that, and the other. He has favors from the Nigerian government. All the stuff that may be true things, but you ask the average African, would you rather a British company come in and replace Dangote as the number one cement maker on the continent?
Yes, they would. Yes, they would. That would make them feel very comforted if you did that. They would talking mess about British Telecom or BP, and they never have. Just like they don't give no guff Exxon, who's responsible for the biggest, worst oil spill catastrophe ever in Nigeria. They have never tried to oust those people, have never tried to fight them, have never tried to oppose them. So the answer to your question is, hell yeah, they would be perfectly fine if it was white men from Europe, white men from Britain, or white men from America doing it. They would sit there and cheese, and however you say, yes, sir, Ms. Charlie and Igbo or whatever, that's what they'd be doing. Let's just tell the truth about it. That's what they would be doing. However you have to dance to jig a new Nigerian, however you do it, that's what they'd be doing.
Right. One more thing is that AfricLand page, I think they need your help on that page, brother. Yeah, I mean, and another thing I want to talk about, too, is before I wrap up, is this idea, we have to understand what you're talking about is real Pan-Africanism, you know? Because what we have right now coming out of Africa is fake Pan-Africanism. They basically, Africans, do you know I go to the Nyarlathotep site, I go to different African sites, I can't tell the difference between them and Stormfront or neo-Nazi site when they talk about African-Americans. They basically have taken the global image of African-Americans with thugs, world star hip-hop, and all the stuff like that, and they take that as African-American culture. They don't get the bother getting to know us. It ain't the truth, you know? But we have this unburdened responsibility to overlook the mud huts and all the poverty and crime and all the stuff that goes on in Africa and look at those one or two buildings they try to put up to impress on the internet, you are 100%, 1,000% right about that, you know, and I'm getting tired of it, you know. But, yeah, I had a I don't know if you saw that thing. I had a 400-comment debate with the South African dude, you know. I said, look, the Durban is owned by Indians and white people. What are you talking about? Oh, he went, well, what do you guys got in America? I said, I'm not saying we have anything in America. But at least I will admit that, you know, look, that just because you're the majority in South Africa don't mean you run South Africa. You black people are still on the bottom of South Africa, and they still own your economy. You know, they own 80% of the stock market. They own 80% of the commercial farms in South Africa. What are you bragging about? Do black people own any of those hotels, those beautiful hotels in Durban? No. You know, so what are you sitting there bragging about something that you don't own? You know, and oh, you just jealous. I said, no, look, let me tell you something. Poverty in South Africa is not like poverty in America. The poor, our poor are online at a freaking at the mall trying to buy a $200 pair of sneakers. Our poor people are poor because they're ignorant, you know. People in Africa are poor because they have absolutely no infrastructure, okay? So they're different. We're fighting a mindset, a wasteful mindset in America. You guys are fighting something that you could have control over, but you refuse to because you don't believe in yourself that you could produce an industrialized nation like everybody else will. You leave all the hard work to the Chinese.
I got a question. For all the people out there who want to talk about the kids who built a radio and the other kids who built a solar lamp or whatever, for all the people hanging their hats on that, okay, so you want to pretend to yourself that that is somehow some proof of some African genius going on there. Okay, fine. Can you tell me why in the holy hell there's that much going on over there? Why come they haven't been able to build their own machines for strip mining, their own machines for diamond mining, and their own machines for oil drilling, and get those Caucasians the hell out of there so that they actually have control of their own resources? If there's really all this repressed genius going on, and really everything is looked up so well, we've been doing oil wells and drilling oil now for over 160 years. Someone explain to me why come Africa's not doing that themselves.
And also, let me ask you a question. Why is it that when we say all the guns is poured in Africa, how come African manufacturers can't manufacture their own guns? You know, if you can tell me a simple thing like a cannon, or just a tube of a steel tube, right, with a couple little trinkets on top of it, with a thing where you put the fire in, you know, and you put the little balls in, you know, you can put makeshift balls, you can even put a coconut in there if you wanted to shoot it, you know?
I mean, a zip gun. I mean, gang members are using zip guns for decades. I mean, that's simple if you want to do that.
You know, and so the bottom line is the African mind. The same problem in Africa existed for 500 years, hasn't broken. Africans wait for Europeans or somebody to show up and tell them whatever they have is worth something, and they negotiate. Before it was people, you know, it was human resources. Now Europeans and Chinese come for natural resources. In Ghana right now, the illegal Chinese miners set up camp, built a whole illegal town, you know, brought prostitutes in there and everything, and mining gold. Took $100 million worth of gold out in 2013. And the Guinean government is like, oh, we're trying to do something. And they arrest a few of them. And what happens is somebody get paid off, and they'll basically take it to court or whatever, you know, this, that, the other. It's a joke. It's a freaking joke. Recently, the other day, the Liberian Minister of Finance says he stumbled on some illegal diamonds that was smuggled out of the country. He was just happened to be on the same plane which two bundles of illegal diamonds were on, and he discovered it? No. Somebody discovered it, and he probably knew about it. But and then the guy that was smuggling the diamonds out of the country, a major offense, right, only gets slapped on the wrist, or Chinese, only gets slapped on the wrist with a $2,000 fine. This is Africa, 2014. No, that's what I said. If we love Africa, we got to sit there and basically hold these people's feet to the fire. And I dare them to start talking. What they do is, they'll throw up about, well, what about black America? We don't run America. We don't have a government. You have a country. You have a government. We can hold you responsible the way you can't hold us responsible for things that go on in America. Okay? So we can hold them responsible. That's our ancestral homeland, and we demand better accountability.
Thank you very much for checking in, brother. I'll let you have the last word.
Okay, yeah, just what I wanted to say, yes, what you're saying is absolutely good. I'm glad you finally I was wondering when you were going to take on the issue of Africa. I guess you did your little homework and everything. And I think that's where we focus. Somebody like you was very thorough, and I couldn't wait till you come on board, you know, and I'm glad you are here now.
I talk about it all the time. I just try to face it in the context of a holistic thing because, for me, it's all about economics. I try to face it in a holistic way because, like I say, I mean, if you drop everything on people, hell, we can't even get them to agree that money is power. I mean, you can see how they argue me about that. We can't even get them to agree on that. So I just take them in steps.
The spirituality.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to pray our way to salvation and spiritual wealth and stuff. So it's
spirituality,
like I say, and plus Africa is, I mean, it's simple, but it's complicated. Not complex, but it's complicated. And, you know, as far as the idiosyncrasies are concerned, because with a lot of people, they don't understand, well, why do we need to go to Africa anyway? And if it's this much of a problem, to hell with them. And they don't quite understand why we can't say that. Why to hell with them is not an option. So, like I say, it's just been one of those things. I mean, I talk about it. I've talked about it around the edges and stuff like that. And it's, I haven't been able to go knee-deep off in it because, as far as I'm concerned, Africans are so have their heads so far up Europeans.
Yeah.
Well, foxholes that.
Yeah.
It's going to take some type of duress to get them to go in the right direction because, let's just be honest, Africans are not going to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. They're going to only do the right thing if there are no other options available. As long as a white person says, you can live with your face under my boot, Africans will sit there and gleefully smile to be there.
Oh yeah. They'll throw rose petals out, and so they see somebody with white skin. And whatnot. Let me give you an example. We have business people that go to the continent, and I coach them all about different countries. And they tell me some of the times they go there, they almost got to get a second briefing, which Africans, sometimes Africans will doubt or second-guess the opinion of African-Americans and go over there. But the white person can have absolutely no knowledge whatsoever, and they'll basically listen to what the white person has to say. It's sad, you know?
It's absolutely pathetic because they're not trying to work together for your benefit on anything. And never will. They are going to work for the best interest of their people, but these are folk who do not have a concept of what my people is. If you're not from their neighborhood, that's it. And that's the problem.
Yeah, their hood. You're not, mentality.
We're the only group of people on the planet who define ourselves by the geographic location we came from. Not by our race, not by our ethnicity, not even by culture, just the geographic location. And that's it. That's you're never going to rise as a people globally when everybody has an organized defense against your scattered and disorganized offense. Thank you very much for joining us, though, brother. We appreciate your words on this. Please do check with us again. See if we can take telephone call from 713. You're on live on the Black Channel.
Damon from Houston. How you doing?
What's on your mind, brother?
There's several. I'm going to touch on three quick topics real quick. First of all, the issue with Jamaica. I was just in Jamaica several months ago on a vacation, and the tourists, all the shops owned by Indians, all of them, and black people are working in them. They own everything. They run everything down there, and you don't see really any black salespeople or people selling stuff until you get outside of the tourist district, and then they're begging and pleading for you to buy something. I mean, it's so unorganized, it's ridiculous. They control everything. I mean, they control the stores. They control the travel between resorts. They control everything. They have completely freezed out the locals, completely freezed them out. I mean, these guys are hustling and starving to death out there. So, I mean, and it's just the same thing. If you look across the United States, it's the same blueprint. You go to any black neighborhood, same thing. The Indians, the Chinese are controlling the economy inside your neighborhoods. Same blueprint. And I see you go outside the United States, the same blueprint as well in Jamaica and probably a lot of these other third world countries that are so-called black countries. Same blueprint. Also, let me touch on a quick point. I live in Texas, And I used to do the payroll for a Mexican grocery store. They're called La Michoacana. They have stores in Austin, Houston, San Antonio, Dallas. And these are like small little grocery stores, no bigger than, say, a 7-Eleven, or maybe, let's say, the twice the size of a 7-Eleven, a local convenience store. They're doing over $100 million in revenue, $100 million in revenue, just off the locals, just off the people, the Hispanics that have come over in the past 20 years that are they're catering to. They're doing over $100 million in revenue. And you can't tell me that black people cannot do that. They're doing over $100 million in revenue. And I'm talking about they have no more than, I'll say, maybe 30, 40 stores, and they're averaging about $3 to $4 million per store. So it's actually probably over $100 million in revenue yearly, owned and ran by Hispanics. And as far as black people, we are cowards. We are scared to die. We are absolutely terrified. White people have a gun to our temples, and we're scared to make a move. That's the reason why we haven't done anything. That's the reason why the people in South Africa aren't doing anything. They're scared to die. They don't want to fight. They're scared to die. That's why if you go around any African country, black country, whatever you want to call it, ran by Europeans, it's ran by the barrel of a gun. And we're scared to fight. And I guess that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for checking in with us, brother. You're absolutely correct. Black people, we are the only people on earth who don't have the ability to muster together to deal with these things. We're the only people on earth who are waiting for somebody to bust salvation, and it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that at all. Now, I'm the only one broadcasting who will sit up here and let you know that these things are obsolete. Tribalism among Africans is obsolete. It's obsolete. You might as well be driving a horse and buggy. It doesn't work that way. You are not going to be able to operate in the 21st century with a 16th century mindset. That you are not African first, that you are members of whatever hokey tribe you came from first. And I don't care if my saying that offends you. It's not about offending you. I don't give a damn if it hurts your feelings. Other people are out here building mammoth skyscrapers, and you're worried about your feelings being hurt instead of saying, you know what? Here's where you're wrong. Take a look at the great and wonderful things that we are doing that the Europeans and the Asians are not doing. Oh, but you can't say that. That's why you want the conversation to migrate over into something else. I believe we've got an international caller here on the line. Xavier, is that you?
Hello, Black First, calling from Tokyo.
Black First, brother, glad to have you online here. Next time, go to the chat room, okay? Because for everybody out there, I don't monitor Facebook or Twitter when I'm broadcasting. There's just too much going on over here for me to go switching through 8 or 9 tabs. So that's why I say next time, just log into the chat room because my moderators will let me know if somebody is on the line or if they're out of country and they need to speak with us.
Well, yeah, I do apologize. I'm just starting to get the hang of this thing. Anyway, Black First, calling from Tokyo. Let's see, what time is it? It's Friday night there?
Friday, 9:17 p.m. Central Time here.
Okay, well, it's Saturday morning here, so I'm a day ahead.
And what's on your mind, brother?
Well, one thing. Well, first of all, I want to say excellent broadcast. I mean, you're like 100% on point on a lot of things. Well, I'd say on like 98.9% of the things that you're talking about. I mean, you are just like, your broadcast is amazing. It's about time for it to be heard. It's the time for it for the way that it needs to be heard, the way it needs to be said. Feelings need to get hurt, and it's time to get ruthless, because to be honest with you, one thing that I found was, you know, living here in Tokyo and everything, non-military, by the way, but living here in Tokyo, it's just, you're seeing international business being played out. You're seeing the global chess game being played out on a massive scale here with the Chinese, with the Koreans, with the Europeans, of course, like all nations of the Europeans. And the Africans are not even in the rings. It's oh, my God. It's just like one thing I found out was that especially doing business here because Tokyo is like one of the like nerve centers of the globe. You have all the embassies, you have all the corporations located here in Tokyo. And it's just, there's only one way to defeat a black man, to make sure that he's not in the ring. We don't even want to step up in the ring. We just want to turn up, party, get hoes. It's pitiful.
So you're saying that there's plenty of Japanese doing business in Africa, but you don't see doing business in Japan?
Not on a real scale. Not on any real scale. I mean, it's more like, you know, when you get onto the court, you get on the court to win. You know, and it just seems to me that no one's getting, as far as like the Africans and black, especially Black America over here, we're not playing to win. We're not getting on the court to win. We're just getting on the court just to play. It's like, oh, we're here now. Oh, okay, we have a ball now. Okay, we look good in our uniforms now. Okay, and everybody else is slam dunking. It's just, we're just like, okay, we're here. You know, everybody's just like showing out, looking good, going nowhere. You know, okay, we're here. Okay, we're invited to the party. Okay, I'm at this embassy party. Okay, I have champagne. Okay, I got a Japanese girlfriend. Oh, by the way, my name is Billy. I'm from America. I'm like, wait a minute, you're from Uganda, man. Hold on, wait. Oh no, dang, it's ridiculous. It is literally ridiculous.
And that's at the grassroots level. That's at the grassroots level. This complete total lack of esteem. This is why I told people, and it upset people when I said it. But I'm going to say it again because it's the damn truth. The reason a Petronas Towers, the reason that you have a, you know, Burj Khalifa is precisely because Arabs don't want anything from white culture.
Yep.
Some clown, I just sit up here and talk about Arab TV. The Arabs understand the difference between entertainment and culture. That is not what you see on Arab TV is not what you see at the mosque. Oh, wait a minute. Who runs Arab society? The mosque does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They understand that there's going to be some foolishness going on. There always has been. That's not new.
It's called Dubai.
Dubai. Please. Okay, so the fact that Arabs are wearing pants means they ain't Arabs no more? You, they bought in the white culture because they're wearing slacks and Armani suits?
Mm-hmm.
You call that buying in the white culture? Give me a damn break. So if them wearing pants is in the white culture, then what is your dumbass paying $4 a gallon gas? What is that then? What is that? He will trade the $3,000 he paid for that suit for the $3 billion that he's making in oil. If you don't know that trade-off every day of the damn week, get the hell out of here. There's no point in discussing you any further. They don't buy into white culture. They don't buy into that. Because when they're kids, you take a look at Osama bin Laden, that is a textbook example. He was a young man. He was in the nightclubs. He was in the nightlife. A young man, rich, has paid his way through everything, cars, clothes, and hoes, the whole nine yards. But he died what? The way that most of them die, a revolutionary. In service to the people, in service to the Quran, in service to his country. They don't buy into the culture. They dabble into it and then they grow up. Their people let them dabble with it and they grow up. Negroes, on the other hand, spend their whole lives chasing the culture. Why? Because unlike Arabs, Arabs did not grow up hoping for a white person to pat them on the head and get their approval. He don't give a damn about having white folks' approval. He is concerned with power, control, and influence. Black men are the only men on the face of the planet who believe that there is something more valuable than power, wealth, and influence. We are the only ones who think there's something more valuable, and that thing that is more valuable is attention.
Mm-hmm. And draws.
Well, that's what you do. We want sexual attention. Give us sexual attention, fashionable attention, popular attention, media attention. Negroes are the only people in the world. The reason why black men do not own a record company, not a record, but a record company, is because one requires work and the other one delivers fame. And white men know that in a black man's mind, fame is worth more than money.
Oh, Kendrick Lamar.
Kendrick Lamar, as I pointed out on my previous podcast, Kendrick Lamar has traded in wealth for fame. Because what he was doing before, he was already a very well-known entity. He didn't need a record label. Why did he get a record label? Because a record label will put you on MTV and on the cover of GQ, where he was, by the way. That's the one thing you couldn't do on your is get on the cover of their magazine and be on the headline of their TV network. And if you sign your soul, I mean sign this contract on the dotted line, then you can be on the cover of our magazine and on our TV station. And guess what? Now that he is in his prime, he is never going to be bigger than he is right now. Kendrick Lamar is the biggest he's ever been. And what is he doing? He is now having to live by the corporation's rules. And Dre, who traded in all of his credibility, every ounce of credibility he used to have, he has traded in to serve at the altar of the beast. First with Eminem.
Most definitely.
And now we've grabbed Kendrick Lamar to make sure that the purpose of Dre signing Kendrick Lamar to the company was not so Kendrick Lamar could be bigger, but so to make sure he wouldn't get any bigger.
Oh, wow, wow, wow. Dang, you know something, what you just hit right there? You know, okay, you know I live in Tokyo,
this
right?
This is why
you know I'm
the authority. Go ahead.
Yeah, you the authority, because what you did right now, what you see, most people don't even understand what you just said right now. You just hit the bottom of the ocean right now with what you just said. You know I live in Tokyo. You know the business that I do. And dealing with the Japanese and everything for the amount of years that I had, basically, one of the things that the Japanese were, as far as, like, the entertainment industry, as far as, like, music, radio, anything, one of the things that they were going to make sure that was going to happen was everything was going to be controlled by their terms, on their culture. They said what came in or what came out because when Soul Train decided to make a move over here, when Don Cornelius, Magic Johnson, and I think Alexander O'Neal was on the plane. I don't know. He was doing something. When they were bringing Soul Train over to Japan, because apparently some Japanese corporation just said threw up the name Soul Train, put it on a club, but they just didn't bother to ask Don Cornelius and everybody about it. But anyway, you had like all these artists that were coming over from the States and everything, and they were telling Don, it's like, hey, look, you know, we love your club and what you did in Tokyo. And Don was like, wait a minute, I don't have a club in Tokyo. Yeah, you did. We were just there. So Don Cornelius found out about it. He came over to check out the situation. And he was like, okay, well, first of all, cease and desist that. Number two, I'm going to start my own club. The Japanese Kidetsus, a radio conglomerate by the name of J-Wave and all these licensing companies said, we ain't going to have that. We will literally buy your, we will basically give you this amount of millions of dollars for us to license that situation, but we control it. Don took the money. And it's like, okay, you know, hey, I got a little money, you know, I'm in Japan, Soul Train's in Japan, it's all great, you know, they got a little TV program and everything like that. And this is what the Japanese did. They set that situation up to fail. They said, okay, we don't care whether we make money on this thing or not. But one thing we're not going to do is we're not going to give up control of our country and what goes on in our country. We don't care how much money it costs. But we're going to control the narrative. It was just wow what you just said with the whole Dr. Dre situation and everything like that about okay, forget money, forget all that stuff. We're playing for power. We will have power over. We will control our resources. We will control what happens on our soil. We will control everything, and we will dictate to what we will dictate to everybody who is not Japanese on what goes on here. You just hit the man, the authority. You just hit it. Oh my God! I'm sorry if I'm sound a little bit coherent. I'm just shocked right now. I'm literally in shock. Wow! Somebody that literally gets it. Black people need to learn this. I'm serious because unfortunately we're too Negro Sambo infested.
And the Godfather, where they said, "Power to get money, money to control power."
Yep. And it's real. I mean, imagine when you will lose millions. Do it intentionally. They're like, I will lose millions of dollars just so I can have control. I will intentionally grab an L, but you will not control what's in this house. I will intentionally and all purpose grab it. I don't care how much money I lose because I can make it up anyway. I can control this. I can make that up. But I'll take a big L just so I can have control. Black first, man.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us. You have to understand, in the case of black people and black men who are supposed to be leaders, we don't understand that you use money for the purpose of maintaining your power. And that if someone is going to gain control of power where you are, you spend whatever is necessary to make sure that that does not happen. Because how can you call the shots where you are if you lose power to someone else? How can you do that if you no longer control the landscape? How can you do that? They will pay you 10 times whatever you want is worth. Not because they are stupid, but because you are looking ahead 20 years, they are looking ahead 100 years, and ultimately letting you sit there will be a cancer that will eat away to the soul of their society. They understand that. Do you? Let's take some more phone calls here. Caller from 718, you're on Live with the Black Channel.
Good evening, sir.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Chris from Connecticut, sir.
Chris from Connecticut, what's on your mind, brother?
You know, you hit something very solid, and I was thinking about it, you and the previous caller, just a little while ago. And what it got me thinking of is the fact that Pan-Africanism and its entire principle has failed. And it's doomed to failure, even as a future concept. And for the simple reason that, you know, just what was said about Don Cornelius, just what was said about Dr. Dre, or was the concept of we sell each other out. That's the moral decay underneath all of that. Black people sell each other out. We live in an age of self-interest. As long as it's not me, nigger, I'm perfectly fine. That's the narrative. When I see Chinese people come into this country, or Indian people, East Indian people come into this country, they come in here to execute a plan. So when they come here and they have their seed money to open up a store, if you notice, if you walk into those stores, they only have their family or their own fellow Indians working in that store. They get their loan, they get their money, they put together one store, they get it working, or a gas station, and then pretty soon they open up another gas station and another store and another thing. And eventually they spread out and they eventually start moving into the better neighborhoods. And that's their game plan. Black people don't do that. Black people are fairly mercenary, and they sell each other out. When I worked in the corporate system, or as long as I have, I've seen black people see injustices go on with their own people, where they're getting fired for things that are unjust. You can basically work with someone and you can tell that maybe that the white corporate overlords are being unjust and they wish to get rid of you by trumping up something or doing whatever it is. And they stay quiet with their heads, pretend that they don't see it, while the person is just basically being walked away by security guards or being escorted out of the building or being told this is their last day. And I've never seen a time anywhere, regardless of, you know, regardless of whatever, African, African-American, whatever, where people just stood up and said no to a boss. They said, you know what, we don't agree with your decision. You know what, we're going to stand up for what's right. We're going to boycott this. We're going to say, you know what, we don't want this. This person, Mike, who is doing such a good job, and he's a black man, and he came to this office on time every day and did his work. You know what? What you're doing here is wrong. So you know what? We're all walking out. I've never seen that.
No, that's a good question. That's a very good statement that you made. Even during the Civil Rights Movement, did they really get up Dr. King, or was it when the folk from the North came down with the SCLC and told them, okay, you need to strike here, you need to strike there, you need to boycott these buses? That's a very interesting anecdote that you raised there. When was the last time that black men stood up on their own? Because today white folk are not going to help black folk boycott nothing, because all we do is to make money from the NCAA to the NFL to the NBA. They're not interested in us boycotting nothing. And do you know this? From the most staunch right-wing conservative to the most leftist liberal, none of them are in support of black men boycotting or going against or having a strike against anything. Anything. Not from the NBA to the NFL. As soon as black men talked about going on strike in the NBA and work that lockout, remember what the white media said? And that includes your liberals, too. That includes Keith Olbermann, y'all. You remember what they said? These are millionaires arguing with billionaires. So all of a sudden, they're telling you that black who are making a couple of $1 million a year are somehow on the level of Jerry Jones and whoever in the hell it is who's the Lakers making billions of dollars a year. All of a sudden, they're telling you these black men are on the same level as those guys. Do you see how quickly that poison got injected?
Yeah. Yeah. Black men don't march for anything, because they, or at least they don't march for anything but a soundbite. When they go out, like Million Man March, or whether it's, you know, Sean Bell was executed, you see it maybe for like one day, and they take photo ops and whatever it is, and then they go right back to their homes. So when you see it, the outrage isn't genuine. The outrage is not consistent. The narrative is not consistent. So if I look at it, I remember fairly well where I was sitting when the verdict came down for Amadou Diallo's shooting and execution. And I remember that, you know, my boss sent me home, because when the verdict came down that all the cops were found not guilty, not guilty, and it was moved upstate so that they could get a fair trial, if I recall, nothing happened. There were no riots in the streets. That kid was, 36 shots, maybe 40 shots into his body. Nothing. So when Sean Bell died, I wasn't surprised that nothing happened. And I wasn't surprised when nothing happened with Trayvon Martin. And I wasn't surprised with all the with Eleanor Bumpers or any of the other things I've seen. Black people value their own lives and their own destinies too cheaply. And that is why we will never amount to anything until we get out of this idea that we are owed things, and get out of this concept that it is all for self. It is all for, we do not have a unified conscious movement or conscious mindset dedicated to the improvement of each other. We do not have a yeshiva university. We do not have a diamond district. We do not have, and if you look at African Pan-Africanism, it's all chaos and bloodshed and conflict. Africans shooting Africans. What the media shows us is just basically, okay, these people are so stupid enough they're killing each other all over the place. So therefore, it's one of the largest continents on the earth, and it can't get itself together. But you know what? We'll just take the diamonds and whatever it is and the resources out of there. You know, same thing with Jamaica, as you pointed out. We'll just put our hotels there, and we're going to live there, and, you know, like, we're going to have a nice resort area, but there's abject poverty all over the place, and these people who live there can't even walk on the beaches. They're not allowed. They're not allowed because it's bought. It's bought and paid for, and you sold it to them, look, hook, line, and sinker, and that's it. So you're allowed to exist there, but you exist in the poverty back areas where no one will see you. And we're content with that. But yet, if you go in these other nations, as you say, if you go to Dubai, you go to these places, you go to China, there is a specific consciousness. When you go to Japan, I've not personally been, but my friends who have tell me that you are treated as a foreigner. You come in there, you are gaijin. You are somebody who, you know, when they look at you, you are treated in a way that, yes, you're a guest here, but we don't want you to stay. We're not making you that comfortable that you would nest down here because you are not part of us. And that is what we need to inject into our culture in order for us to kind of have an awakening that we need to now educate ourselves with. And I'm going to tell everyone that I know of my family to come listen to this broadcast because this is quintessential core knowledge that needs to be injected into the brains of everybody listening here is the idea that the longer that we sit in apathy and do nothing, every minute that ticks down in this clock that we sit down and do nothing, we make excuses. The white man did this. You know, we have to look at ourselves. We are complicit in what has happened to us. And we sit there and we want to blame everybody else. You know, black men and black women who are grown adults want to blame everyone else for their condition that they find themselves in. You are the common denominator of your choices, good or bad. But black people just want to shine it off and say that, no, it's the white man, it's slavery. Well, you know, yes, you know, that did occur, but how long are you going to use that as a veil to prevent yourself from success? How long? How long are the Jews going to use the Holocaust to use that to prevent them from success? They didn't use that for very long.
Well, they didn't use it at all. They simply used it to get their foothold back, their property back. And the next thing they said was, forget this, Israel, here we come.
Yep.
And that was what they did there. And got themselves a hold of media corporations and law firms and everything else to make sure that they were secured. That's why, you know, threatening to sue a Jewish person doesn't get very far. Why? Because they got at least three lawyers in their family. Trust me, you will go bankrupt far before he does. Long before he does.
Yeah.
They're not worried about that. We as black people, on the other hand, we've just been swinging it and winging it, and it's not working out so well.
Yeah. Black people, when you even see Indians and they've bought those casinos, you know, they too were, you know, they were killed off by the white people, and they and those few tribes turned it around, and now they have, you know, Mohegan Sun by me, they have Foxwoods, and they're doing pretty well for themselves. They now have something that they can say, all right, we're taking something back. We're using our knowledge, we're using our financial and fiscal intelligence to say, you know what, we're going to turn this around and make it so that if you want to come over here, you're going to have to give us your money. You know, black people, if you had any sort of, and I encourage people to say, you know what, you want to build businesses? Instead of talking about it, do it. Be proactive. Come up with a plan and a business plan and a strategy and execute it. The worst that can happen is that you can fail. But if you never try it and you never do anything, you just sit there and sit back and you're just listening to this broadcast and another day passes and you don't do anything, then you're complicit in your own failure. You're an accomplice.
Well, let's talk about that for just a moment, though. You said the worst that can happen is you fail. And that's
correct.
A severe problem with black people in perspective and thinking. When black people think about anything, we always look down and say, that could be us. When white people think about anything, they always look up and say, that could be me. When we're talking about weight loss and being physically fit, black women are the worst about this. They look at the biggest, fattest woman they can find, Sid Bay, and say, well, I'm okay. I'm looking down at her. I'm better than her. So, hey, that could have been me. Meanwhile, white people take a look at, you know, Gina Carano and say, that could be me. They look yeah. up when it comes to finances. Black people take a look at the poorest person and say, well, that could be me. We gauge ourselves against the worst case scenario. White people take a look at Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and say, that could be me. It's a difference in perspective that colors our lives.
You're exactly right, sir. And I will tell you this. And it's a good thing you clarified me on that, because that is exactly correct. I will tell you that we are spectators in our own failure. I say that because every day when I would go to a job and I would happen to go to the lounge where all black people were predominantly working, I would see them watching the Judge Mathis show. And when I'm watching them watch the Judge Mathis show, they're looking at some black guy who's being sued by his girlfriend for what? For not paying a debt, for maybe leaving her with some kids that she's looking for child support from, or DNA tests, or they're watching the Maury show and they're oohing and aahing, and it's our people who are on that stage being mocked, being jeered at. We use that. We look at our own failure of our own people as entertainment. You don't see Asian people on the Maury show. You don't see Indian people on the Jerry Springer show, right? But yet the majority of black people that are up there to be mocked and to be paraded as fools.
Because attention means more to us than anything else. That yeah. attention, that temporary notoriety, we don't care whether we're famous or infamous so long as we get it. That's all we're concerned about. But you know what? Even in the case where white folk are up there doing that, because they do have white people out there too, even yeah. in the case where Asians and Indians and Arabs are out there, understand something. It goes down the same rubric as the porn industry. They can, it costs you a grip to get an Arab female with your clothes off, and she's usually from the United States. She's not one from over there. And what's the reason for that? Because they keep a lock on their identity and their society. And even yes. for the chick that you were able to get naked, those people can afford to have a few hoes. They can afford to have some sluts. Because yeah. the rest of their society is together and is in shape. They can afford right. to have that. That's the yeah. difference.
Negative. They can have the negative excesses because they can afford it. Just like the white power broker or stockbrokers that can afford to use and snort up cocaine because they're making millions of dollars. So, yes, there
remember,
is the
remember
excess.
McAfee. Remember mm-hmm. McAfee of the McAfee security, internet security.
Yes.
I've got yes. billions of dollars. He's been whacked out of his mind on drugs for the last mm-hmm. 10, 15 years. But then again, he can spend a couple of $1 million on drugs and $1 million on whores and everything else he was doing down there in South America because he got mm-hmm. billions.
Yeah.
His body will give out before the drugs and the money do. His yeah. body will give out long before that ever happens.
And yet black people
have
use
the last
drugs
word, brother.
Thank you very much for that, sir. Black people use drugs, and yet they're poor, and they narcotize their communities. And, I mean, I was disgusted at seeing how this woman was going on that go-beat back and forth with you, which I just felt it was almost like she was annoying, like she was being a mosquito. But she was going back and forth and defending a concept that was so flawed and so utterly ridiculous that I looked at this and said, black people need to wake up to the reality of, first of all, being supportive of those who are those black intellectuals that are looking to uplift the race. You need to support and you need to get on board and become a black intellectual and to understand what that means. And that means the first thing is to understand that you don't know everything. Throw away the arrogance. Understand and listen and learn and absorb and unlearn what you have learned. And then you can come back. I do believe that some black people are salvageable. Some are not. But from that salvageable portion, you can build the community and build the businesses that basically can take away our consumerist addict dependency that has been a cancer to our race. Thank you very much for hearing me out, brother.
Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it. See if I can grab another caller here. Caller from the 242. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah, good night, TBA. Black First, how are you?
Black First, Garvey, I take us home, brother.
Well, TBA, you know I'm Jamaican, right? I lived in Jamaica, and I've lived in the Bahamas, so I've lived in multiple Caribbean countries, right? And I went back and I read your, I didn't initially saw it, but when you spoke about it, I went back and I read your comment about drugs in the Caribbean and in particularly Jamaica and how persons don't have a fighting spirit because of it. And I saw some of the comments that were made against you. And let me tell you this, TBA. The only reason why some persons might have a problem with what you said is because you're a foreigner. Because the truth is, if you listen to any Jamaican talk show, you have Jamaicans calling in and complaining about the same thing over and over all day. We want to pretend as if drugs isn't a problem, as if weed isn't a problem. It is. And the only reason why they have a problem with you saying, hey, it's an issue, is because you're a foreigner. Because you have Jamaicans who say the same thing. And that's the only reason. You know, I grew up in Jamaica. I grew up seeing the weed smoking. I grew up around that type of stuff. And it's not abnormal to see a guy with his child and he's smoking. He have a child in one hand and a joint in the next one. And he's smoking and blowing the smoke in the child's face or something like that. It's not abnormal. I've seen persons, friends of mine when I was growing up, who had a choice between food and weed, and they chose to spend their money on weed and not eat. So for anyone to say, well, you know what, weed is not a drug there. Personally, I'll be honest with you. I've smoked before in my life, and I can tell you that there is absolutely no benefit whatsoever to smoking. I experimented with smoking when I was a child. I could count on both hands the time I've done it, but I did. I grew up around people who were smoking all the time. The only thing I saw them getting is yellow teeth and bad breath. There's absolutely no benefits whatsoever to smoking weed. And if anyone who thinks that smoking is not a problem or it's okay, just ask anyone who has to work with persons who are addicted. Drugs affect different people differently. You have a person who could smoke one joint, or you have a person who could drink a cup of wine and they'll be all right. And you have the next one who you'll give them a cup of wine and they'll be running down the street naked. The truth is, drugs is a problem in Jamaica. It is a problem. Yes, it's a fact that most people don't use it. But too much people use it.
In George Orwell's 1984, for people who've never read Orwell's 1984, you have to remember that part of the strategy that the regime, that totalitarian regime of the book used, was that they would give free alcohol and free drugs to the population. Now, this is Orwell telling you this decades ago. Predicting this decades ago that this is what you do. Why? Because keeping your population intoxicated and stupefied and narcotized will make sure that they never rise up in revolt. Not only are you keeping them placated, but they no longer have mental faculties to be able to resist you or stand up to you even if they wanted to. So the drugs exactly. Make sure they don't want to fight, and even if they did want to fight, they're in no condition to be able to do it.
TBA, I'm telling you this. I live in Jamaica. I know Jamaican culture. Drugs and entertainment has become the culture. And when you try to talk serious things to people, when you try to tell them about economics or politics or things that are life and death matters, they don't care because guess what? They have too much entertainment. You turn the radio on and it's entertainment. You turn the TV on, it's entertainment. Entertainment and drugs. That is the culture. And the thing is why the Indians are so successful and the Chinese, and because the majority of people just do not care. The only persons who care about business are the minority. It's the Indians and the Chinese. And when I speak to my friends and I say, you know what, I can't stand the fact that here we live in a country that is majority black, and yet still everything is owned by a minority, and they don't care. They don't care. They look at you whenever you say these things. They think you are racist or something. They think you are a racist. They don't prize nothing that is Jamaican or nothing that is black or nothing that is native. They don't prize these things. One of the greatest insults you could insult a Jamaican right now is to tell him that his clothes or something like that was made in Jamaica. They don't care about those things. And they frown in intelligence. They put a premium on dating foreign non-black women. And that is why you could have a trailer park chick from the States or from Canada or something. They'll come and initially, immediately, they become the prize. You know? You have persons who could hardly scrap together a few bucks for a vacation, and they'll come to Jamaica, and all of a sudden these persons are the prize. Because we put a premium on dating non-black women. We put a premium on wearing and using products that is not made in this country. You know? When you talk to people and you tell them about blackness, or they look at you as an outsider. They don't care about intelligence. I've seen persons who are intelligent who have to hide their intelligence just so they could make it through the day, just so they could get along. If you try to talk anything of significance, geopolitics or anything like that, the room just goes silent. No one cares. The only thing they care about is entertainment, clothes, having fun, and that's it. That's it. I almost had a fight with two of my friends, and these are persons who are friends of mine who I was talking about history. It was in February. I was talking about black history, and these two persons was telling me that they are unwilling to focus on anything black. They don't care about nothing black history, none of that, because as far as they are concerned, most of their family members, were white. And I look at these two black men and ask them, how is it that you get black if most of your family members going back through the days were white? When it comes to owning the economy and buying products that are made and supporting black-owned businesses, and we don't care about it. Entertainment and drugs is a problem. That has become the culture, and when you say it, the only reason they have a problem is because you were a foreigner saying it. It's that pride, the feeling that, hey, you have to defend your country regardless, even if what the person is saying is the truth. It's that false pride. And until we can accept these facts and accept responsibility and take the blame and say it's all of us who caused this. But when you speak out as an intelligent person or as a person who have the right mindset, you are ostracized. You are pushed to the side. You are fight. You know, you have no help. You have no assistance whatsoever. Most people just do not care. And that is why the country is losing its middle class, because the middle class, the intelligent, they have a hard time among these people. So they have to pack up and they have to leave. They have to go to Canada. They have to go to England. And that is why the average Jamaican you might come across in the States, or you'll find them being ambitious and being intelligent. Yes, some. That's because these are the talented people who have to leave in order to make it. Because if they stay home, they'll never make it. I know a guy, growing up, I know a guy who had a talent for engineering. He built a chopper, and it flew. And he could never get the government to sponsor him, to help him. Intelligence is frowned upon. The government will prefer to give a Chinese or an Indian economic benefits than to give it to a local Jamaican. They don't care. In this country, you have no assistance whatsoever. The drugs is a problem. Too much entertainment. Everything is about entertainment. Fashion and dating non-black foreign women. I'm telling you, man, these people do everything, the opposite of everything that makes sense. And when you stand up and you speak about it, you're ostracized, you're pushed to the side. And it's not just Jamaica. It's almost every Caribbean country that I know of. Because they have the same culture. They don't care. They put a premium on anything that is non-black.
I'm hoping that there is a bright side a silver lining on some cloud somewhere. Maybe you can help me with that. Hopefully you can give me some good news that a few years ago the Chinese were supposed to be building this $2 billion resort down there. Hopefully nothing has come of that in the Bahamas. At least I'm hoping nothing has come of that. Do you have any word on that?
TBA, they are getting ready to, they're taking on staff now, so I think the project is in the final stage, so they are training personnel. But what happened was that the government gave these people a bunch of land, premium property, for a $2 billion investment. But here's the thing. The majority of the workers are actually not locals. The majority of the workers are actually Chinese. So they brought in the workers. The majority of the contractors are not local. So they brought in the contractors. They brought in the majority of the workers. And the only aspect that locals have to benefit from is you'll be the maid. You'll be the painter, the maintenance man, the gardener. Just jobs, jobs, jobs. Yes, you do have a few executives, but it's in the minority. All the money, it's owned by the Chinese. It probably will be run by the Chinese. And the only thing that the locals have is just the jobs. And the thing is, I have family members who work for these same foreign companies, and I'm telling you that. They are not interested in paying anything. The only amount of money you get the salary you get is enough to probably pay your mortgage, and that's it. It's just simply a living wage, and that's it. You own nothing. But if
you just enough money to come back to work the next day.
Exactly.
Same as always.
But the thing is, TBA, we have the land. We have the banks. Here's the trick about it, too. Plenty of times, these foreign companies that come in to these countries and say, hey, we're investing $2 billion, you know where to get the money? They get the money from the local banks. So the banks will lend them the money. They invest the money, control the project, and hire locals and take the benefits. But the thing is, if you have a company, a local company, and you actually go to a bank, you have a good idea. We have the land. We have the expertise. We've been doing tourism forever. They will not give it to you. They will not give it to you, DBA. I'm telling you. It's almost as if the government is an enemy of the people.
It's not almost. It's not almost. They are. It's not almost. They are. They are the ally
exactly.
of the foreigners. They are the ally of the European colonialists. They are the ally of the drug dealers. But they are the enemies of the people. Let's call them for what they are. They are the enemies of the people.
CBA, let me tell you something. You see, one of the major problems in this whole Caribbean, and I've noticed it because I study a lot and I read a lot and I keep up with current events, and the colonial economic structures that existed prior to colonialism are still intact. They are still intact. I can tell you that a majority of the security forces, whatever branch you could think of, these persons are members of the lodge. The majority of the judiciary are members of the lodge. And I still believe that the old colonial powers are pulling the strings behind the scene. I really do believe it. And the thing is, if you try to tell people to, you know, we have to do something about this, they don't care about it. They don't care about politics. They don't care about economics. I've had friends of mine who are employees, and I say, you know what? I'm tired of these foreigners controlling the businesses, and everywhere you go, any company of significance is owned by a foreigner, a non-black foreigner. It's time for us to support black-owned businesses and start your own. They don't care about hearing anything like that, DBA. They believe that you are a racist or you are a prejudiced person. That is what they believe. They put a premium on dating non-black women. Around spring break season, you see these young black men just flocking to these spring break areas just to date white women. You know, it's like a feeding frenzy going on. The thing, people do not care. and they don't love themselves. They don't. They don't value being black. They don't. They just don't. Anything that is foreign is automatically better. And we are suffering for it because we have no jobs. I sat in my room and I look around my home and I say, let me see if I could find something that's locally made. And the truth is, DBA, I was just looking around and I couldn't find it. We do not have a manufacturing sector. For in the Bahamas where I live, 98 cents out of every dollar that is brought into the country goes back into South Florida. So we are basically living on 2% of our income, our national income, 2%. Everything is imported. If you try to start, you will never get the support. People just do not support their own.
Well, they don't see
them as their own. Foreign is better.
That's the problem. They don't see them as their own. This goes
exactly.
back to the central problem of dealing with the tribalism of Africa is because Africans do not see other Africans as their own. They just look at the street they're on and say, well, that's mine. All the rest of you, I don't know y'all.
TBA, I can tell you this. The group of persons in this country that get the worst treatment are black foreigners. They'll kiss the white persons, you know what. They'll kiss the Europeans. But as a black foreigner, you are treated as second-class citizen, in particularly the Haitians. You see, we have a problem with accepting our own people. When I was going to school, the worst thing you could be called was a Haitian. When a person wanted to say something derogatory about you, they'll call you a Haitian. You know? But blacks are treated the worst. Whites are. When I was going to school, I remember one time I was being told by my teacher that, you know, when you see the visitors, you should smile. And I was like, let me tell you something, DBA. School is hell. It's nothing but a brainwashing camp over here. It's hell. And that is why so much children are doing so badly. Because you are force-fed things that are blatant lies. It's just a brainwashing camp. You are taught that you are taught nothing African. You don't get black history or nothing like that. If you know any black history or whatever, you have to learn that on your own. You are taught everything European is good. Everything in as far as black people are concerned, started during slavery. You had nothing before that. You know, so people don't really have the love of self that they have. And when you do, I had to confront some of my teachers because I know the answers to questions that were wrong that they were forcing us to put, and I had to confront some of my teachers, and they was like, you know what, that's what they have in the paper, you have to put that. And that's why you have certain people grow up with this disdain for themselves, because they are not taught anything to be proud of. So they treat foreigners better. I mean non-black foreigners better. They don't believe in nothing. They have to have, if it's not an American, they don't want to wear it. All the food is imported. They don't support local nothing. And yes, drugs is a problem too. But they don't want to hear it.
Well, as I said, we're the people who love being lied to. We love that being fed to us every single day. Think about that fact that the Chinese have come and dropped a couple of billion dollars, and it's not because Jamaica is rich in natural resources. It's not because there's a bunch of diamonds and a bunch of mining and a bunch of oil. They felt that Jamaica is worth spending $2 billion on. And what does that tell you? That tells you just how valuable Jamaican land really is. That tells you just how valuable it really is. And yet the only people who do not acknowledge this are the Jamaican people themselves.
TBA, I met this American guy. He was a pilot. He was a white pilot one time, and he said to me, I've traveled all over the world. You want me to tell you the difference between Jamaica and every other country that I've ever visited? And I say, what's that? And he said, in Jamaica, you don't have to plant a seed for it to grow. You could eat a fruit and throw it in the ground, and you come back, you'll have a tree. The soil is so rich, TBA. Wherever you are, you always see mountains in the background. It's a beautiful country. But the thing is, the people who live in the country do not appreciate the country. They don't take politics seriously. They don't take economics seriously. They don't take intelligence seriously. I tell you, I've seen intelligent persons suffer for lack of friendship, lack of camaraderie, lack of in encouragement. If you are intelligent, you have to hide your intelligence. Because people feel as if you believe that you are better than them. If you try to speak properly or if you conduct yourself in a manner that, that is respectable.
The people who live in the country do not appreciate the country. Now, I wonder if everyone listening realizes how frightening a statement that is that you just gave. That the people who live in the country do not appreciate the country. And the reason why that is such a terrifying statement is because has any person in history ever seen a group of people who did not appreciate the land that they were on or its value and yet retained control of that land?
TBA, let me tell you something. You have Asians who are coming in right now into the country, the Chinese, and I'm telling you, these persons who could come, they could set up, they could live illegally, and they could do business, and if they're caught, they're given a slap on the wrist. Because there is no sense of national identity. If you ask what's a Jamaican, they can't really tell you, because at an early age, every Jamaican is thought out of many one people. That's national motto, out of many one people. This is just to say, you have all these different races came into Jamaica and made one people, which is a lie. The majority of us are Africans. We are black. But because they prefer to call themselves anything else besides just say, I'm black. I am African. They have some pride in it.
Let me deal with that right quick, because I explained to you all what the smelting pot was last week. Let me explain to you about this pluribus unum from many one. To see black people adopting something that was made by European colonialists is downright humiliating. It's just absolutely mind-bogglingly embarrassing. They should be ashamed to be doing that. But then again, nothing has value. I mean, they're even to the point of adopting white people's slogans. From many one.
PBA,
that only makes sense if you are people in power. And numbers do not give power. Population does not give you power. Control of money, wealth, and resources gives you power. And at no time have Jamaicans had more money, wealth, and resources than the white folk coming there. And so for you to roll out the damn welcome mat and put up billboard saying from many one, that cannot help but to destroy you. There's no way that you are going to survive this from many one, because they're the ones with the power, wealth, and influence. The only thing that you can do is to help enhance their power, wealth, and influence. But the difference is power, wealth, and influence will not stay with you. They are going to take that power, wealth, and influence with them wherever they're going. But it can't be from many one, because if it's from many one, then that means that you are retaining something from the many. That works fine if you are the dominant culture and you are retaining the benefits that were aggregated through the many. But that's not what's happening. China just showed you who's getting the damn benefits. $2 billion on Jamaican soil, but they call the shots. They own the wealth. They have the power. They will decide if your Aunt Fanny gets to eat this week or not. From many one. Yeah, $1 bills.
TBA, let me ask you a question. Do you know who is the head of state in Jamaica?
Not anymore.
You don't know. You want me to tell you?
Go ahead, brother.
It's actually Queen Elizabeth. It's actually Queen Elizabeth II. After half a century of independence.
Yeah, as far as Jamaica, I haven't actually really considered them to have any heads of state. Because, I think Coke and his daddy showed the whole damn world that there really isn't one.
TDA, let me tell you something, man. We've had 50 years of independence, and there are still persons who believe that we should still keep the British monarchy as the head of Jamaica, as the head of the government, which is the state, which is the current status quo. They don't believe in full independence, and I'm telling you that plenty of these countries that you see in the Caribbean, in Africa, who might be independent politically, are truly and really not independent. And I have had to realize that. And that is one of the reasons why you see plenty of these countries cannot make any economic progress. Because these countries are still colonies. We can't even agree that we should get rid of the European colonial structure. Queen Elizabeth is the head of state, but here's the kicker. The average Jamaican cannot enter Britain without a visa. So you have a British monarchy who is the head of Jamaica, but yet still Jamaicans cannot enter Britain without a visa. And you have Jamaicans who will support and say, well, you know what, we should leave it as is. We should be ashamed. But when you discuss these things with Jamaica, the average Jamaican, they don't care. They're more focused on entertainment. They're well-versed in entertainment.
We have rights on your land. We don't have any rights on ours. And that's the way it's always run.
Exactly.
I'll let you have the last word, brother.
TDA, it's a sad situation, man. I'm telling you that plenty of these Caribbean and African countries I've lived in too. When you think are independent, they are really not. They are really not. And you know, most of our problems come from not having that love for ourselves and each other. And once we could solve that problem, to value ourselves, value what we have and have love for ourselves, we will always find ourselves trying to be something we are not and being rejected and getting nowhere. But I'll tell
you,
black person, you have
yourself,
a good night. And,
if you can't make peace with yourself, you can forget about making any type of inroads with the rest of the world. If you can keep a house divided unto itself, you can whore out the daughters, enslave the men, and that's going to be your house for the next million years as long as you keep that up. Thank you very much for joining us, brother. Well, thank you very much for joining us, brother. Please check in with us again. It's always a joy hearing from you. And next time you're lying, let me know you're on there, Garvey. I don't just sit there now because I can see it just shows numbers on here and stuff, and especially for my international callers. If you are somebody calling internationally, we want to hear from you, but you need to be in the Ustream chat room to let us know that you're there, because that's the one that my moderators will be watching, and they'll let me know, hey, we got somebody who's online from, you know, China or Botswana or, you know, Outer Mongolia. I can help you, but I can't help you if I don't know you're there. Caller from 402, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 402, last try. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello?
Yes, you're on live.
All right. How you doing, Jason?
Yes, sir. You calling from?
Okay. I'm calling from Louisiana.
Okay, and what's on your mind, brother? What's on your mind?
Okay, I've been listening to the last few calls that you've been getting, and I'm concerned about a few things that were said. One of them is the circumstances regarding the circumstances in Africa, okay, and how people have a tendency to compare the things that happen in Africa with the things that are happening to us here in the United States. And I'll be honest with you, there are some similarities, but I don't think those similarities are rooted deep enough to really connect us to them. I mean, because Africa's fall came out of arrogance and short-sightedness, in my opinion. Okay? It's been my experience with black leadership, especially when black men have that leadership position, that the second you go to them and you ask them for something, they lean back, their chests get big, and they smile because they think that if you're coming to them and you're asking them for something, that they must really be, they must be the thing. They must be that powerful, that glorious, that wonderful.
Exactly. This is what I was mentioning before when I said that it comes down to attention, that they feel that if you come and ask them something, then that's the same as you having power, or that you must have some type of major influence, as opposed to, no, I'm just here for what I can get from you. Power is defined as your ability to do bad things to other people, not to give good things to them. If you have a daughter and I want your daughter, that doesn't mean that you have power per se. You can give me a benefit, but if I grab your daughter and run off with her, what are you able to do then? Now we're going to find out if you have power, if you are able to take things from, to deny someone things. Now you've got power, because if a person comes up asking and you say no, and then they come back with 100 goons and they take what you got, you don't actually have power. So for black men in particular, yeah, I mean, if all you have to do is sit up here and puff up their ego, and you can sweet talk them into giving anything you want. And this is what I was saying before about this has been a long-term problem in the psychology of African peoples, in that we have really been playing the power game. We've been playing these games of petty esteem, but we have not been playing the game of power. So I agree with that completely.
Well, okay, we haven't been playing the game of power, but we had the power. We were just using it differently than everybody else was. And so at some point, when they start negotiating and making agreements, thinking that they've made great agreements that have somehow made them look better in the eyes of their people, that's when they find out later on down the line why they were being asked for what they were being asked for. But then again, they never would have seen it to begin with. The things that white people had in mind, the things that the Asians had in mind, the things, you know, the things that everybody else around the world had in mind, Africans didn't have that stuff in mind. They didn't think about that stuff. Guns, tanks, planes, what is that? They wouldn't know what that is even if you stuck it right under their nose, even if you gave it to them. They wouldn't know what it was. They wouldn't know what to do with it. And it's always been my experience that when you stick something in front of a black man and he doesn't understand what it is, rather than get to familiar with it, to learn what it actually is, in a lot of cases, he just dismisses it because he doesn't want to look ignorant. Now, that right there is what makes Africa different than black people here in the United States of America. We've never had that position of power, never had that position of authority, never had somebody come to us for what it was we had, where we even had an opportunity to lean back and feel that moment of arrogance. I know that there have been some black men in this country who have made the mistake of thinking that they were in that position, only to find out later that they weren't. But we've never had that. How are you going to have any kind of a position? How are you going to have any kind of authority? How are you even going to have any chance to be arrogant at all when you come from a line of people whose lives started all over again from being shackled and chained?
Well, that was what College Genesis was saying before, though, is that the criticism of black people in America, we can't really make a correlation of that with Africans because Africans have controlled their resources, or at least they have ownership of them. Black people in America are 13% of the population. In Africa, black people are 90% of the population everywhere you go. All the governments are black, and yet you have control of none of the resources. Black people in America can at least point to, hey, we're only 13% of the population. What did you expect us to do with 13% of the population? Now, even still, we should have done more than we have, but they've got way less excuses for it. And when we have a situation where the young man who called me last week, Eli, is scared. Young man called me afraid, scared, terrified of discussing Pan-Africanism with other black people. What he really means, when you say you won't discuss Pan-Africanism, that means you will not discuss your identity as black people. He called me twice to explain to me why they were trembling in fear and why it was acceptable and ain't nothing we can do and we broke and ain't nothing we can help make happen. He called so he could defend that the entire time. So this is a long-standing tradition that we have as Africans, both in America and around the world. We look for situations so we can cower down as opposed to looking at situations so we can stand up. And at this point right here, we as black people in America are in the highly dubious position where we have to educate Africans on what Pan-Africanism is because we have a shaky concept of it, but they are anathema to it. They are against the idea of Pan-Africanism because, as colleges pointed out earlier today, Pan-Africanism is actually in the minds of Africa's elite and Africa's leaders and the politicians and business people, Pan-Africanism is actually a liability to them because we as American blacks are a direct threat to their power and influence in a way that they don't see non-Africans being. Why? Because we as black people can run for political office and we look just like the people. They don't want their minds, what they're telling themselves, well, as long as we have political control, the same garbage that they thought when the Europeans showed up with chains first time, they haven't learned anything from that experience. Let me say it quick. The Africans have learned absolutely nothing from the last 500 years. They learned nothing. Nothing at all. The Europeans can march right back there tomorrow morning to Ghana and every other place with chains and march right out of there. They learn nothing from it. In South Africa, the young school children and the teenagers, young adults, don't even know what apartheid was. Jews learned their experience in the death camps. Africans learn nothing. Africans don't learn anything. And for anybody who's offended by what I've said, you get up and show me the truth of it. You need to stop running from these realities if we're going to change them and accept it. If your football team sucks, your team just sucks. And be honest about it. They didn't sit up here and try to pat Jamar Russell on the hand and make him feel good. They said, boy, we thought you were a number one draft. You done put on 100 damn pounds and can't throw the ball. You are fired. I don't care how much money we spent on you. And nobody else has even thought about picking him up. And guess what? The Raiders are a better team than they were when they had him. The Saints are a better team now than they were 7 years ago by being honest about it. The team sucks. And we need to be honest and forthright and candid about why the African team sucks.
Let me ask you something. Why even worry about Africa?
Well, the reason why is because a people who can be separated from their origin are a people without identity. And the people without identity are always going to be subject to these same evils. White supremacy is not a local thing. It's not just confined to Louisiana. It's not just confined to the Western Hemisphere. It's global. There's no place that you're going to go that you're going to escape. And the reason that white supremacy has been so successful in decimating Africans in America is because we have had a liability that Africans, that Mexicans, Asians, and other people have not had. They still have a connection to their identity and their origins. The first thing the slave owners did in America when they got black people here was to separate you from your origin, separate you from your identity. And what did he tell you? That my identity, the Smith Plantation, the James Plantation, the Johns Plantation, the Brown Plantation, my identity is your identity. And we've been looking up to them. That was part of the process of infantilizing us by transforming us and turning us into people without an identity. So we look to him for our identity. We look to his religious books. We look to his history books. We look to his cultural customs. We look to his language for our identity. And no wonder we've been our asses kicked ever since, because whenever it comes down to why am I doing this? Why am I starting this business? Why am I buying this house? Why am I starting this family? We keep having to come back to him and his rationales and his reasons for why I'm doing it, because we don't have an identity outside of his. That is why the connection to Africa is crucial. That is our identity.
Hold up. Now, I feel like this. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, but I do disagree with that, because the way this country was built, our identity is woven throughout this country's history. You got to remember, our people set foot on this continent before 1776, okay? They built what they had off of us, okay? Their ability to do what they do, their ability to go where they go, is because of the work that we put forth, because of the ingenuity that we put forth, because of the ideas that we put forth that they to this day don't want to admit to unless we strangle it out of them. Okay? So when you're talking about our identity, a portion of our identity exists inside their identity. Their identity is built on ours. Our methods of entertainment, they lived on that. They thrived on that. They partied on that. They drank and they smoked on that. Our singing, same thing. Our ability to work better than they do, they lived on that. They thrived on that.
Well, the problem is that everything before 1776, I mean, actually before 1492, I mean, we can't go off of that, because there are no lasting structures, either cultural or otherwise, that came from the time before the Europeans showed up. Everything after that, everything after they showed up, their structures, both their social construct and their physical constructs, are all still here. As far as our contribution since then, I think you're confusing presence for identity. We had presence here, but there isn't anything specific African that is a part of America's social, governmental, societal, cultural structure. The only
I'm not talking about culture and structure, our presence. I'm not talking about it being African.
Yeah, but being dark-skinned is not enough. We can't be the dark-skinned people of Americas. That is not identity.
I am not talking about the skin color. Okay? And, yes, part of the culture came with it, because you got to understand, okay? The people who came over here, they were forced forced to let go of their culture, let go of their history. They didn't let go of it. They just didn't display it. And that doesn't mean that it went anywhere. It's still there.
It's gone now. I mean, it's gone now because people are described by their language. They're described by their culture. There is no African culture except for the Gullahs, if you want to include them. But there is no distinct African culture in America. You have some people who developed a survival culture who are from Africa, and we have cultural behavioral nuances that are different from the Europeans, but we don't have an African culture that has survived in America. We've just got a distinct differentiated behaviorism, but we do not have an African culture. We are not Europeans, and we do not have a European mind, well, European behaviorism, but we don't have a specific African one. It's going to change what you with black people changes from place to place. That's the problem. If we still had contact with origins is what gives you your culture. You know, that like with Japan with the bowing or Middle East, you know, with the hijab, that's having connections to your culture.
Okay.
Whether you agree with those practices or not, you still got a connection to them. I'll have to let this be the last word because we're coming up short on time, and I try to get, I got about a dozen left on here. I want to try to get in as many of them as I can. I'll let you have the last word.
Okay. Then I'll end it with this. I am okay with the concept of not being connected to Africa because based on what I've heard about the way that Africa has conducted itself, maybe we over here as black people need to have that disconnection so that we can develop something new. Because throughout our trials and tribulations in this country, one of the very, very powerful and consistent gifts and talents that we have is the ability for reinvention. And that has shown up time and time again, generation after generation. And every time we reinvent ourselves, you know it's worth something because they come right in and try to access it and use it to their own benefit. And once we see how far they go with it, then we know how much it's worth. Now, as soon as we learn to reinvent ourselves and hold on to what it is that we have that they prize so highly, then we'll really be going forward.
Thank you very much for checking in with us. Do call us again. Let me see. Caller from 904, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Kind of. Your phone a bit muddled there.
I just wanted to say, Black First, I really enjoyed this. I'm reading this book called The Capitalist Nigga, and it's talking about this very thing.
You're
going
to have to,
Wait a minute.
If you're on speaker or whatever, I'm going to ask you one last time.
Can you, hear me well now?
You can you hear me well now? We don't want your volume dropping in, dropping out. Now, what's your name again?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I am Keith from Jacksonville,
Okay,
and I want to say I really appreciate this program. Yes. This dovetails with this book I'm currently reading. This book is called The Capitalist Nigger. If anybody knows about it, read that book. And it talks about this very thing about how Africa, despite all of this educational advancement and all the scoring high on the test, you still can't even make a gun to protect your resources. All the skyscrapers, those beautiful skyscrapers you see in Durban and these other places in Africa were built by non-Europeans. That fabulous statue that you see in Senegal that they talk about all the time, showing the black man holding up the black baby, that was built by the North Koreans. I don't know what it is about black people and manufacturing. Why can't we dig in the ground and take those resources and make finished products?
We do not value anything unless white people told us it was valuable. It comes back to an esteem issue. We consider our gold to be ornamentation. We do not consider it to be precious metals until white people show up. We consider our dancing to be jointing. We don't consider it to be expression in liberal arts until white people show up. As I've always said,
right,
we don't consider anything to be valuable until a white person shows up and tells us that we should value it. If a black person says to value it, we're offended. That offends
mm-hmm.
us as black people for a black person to say it.
You know, when I was in the military, and I was a welder in the military, and I kind of see how the approach goes to making things, to manufacturing things, to putting things together. And there's a distinct logic into putting things together and and organizing things. And I just don't see that anymore with blacks. And I'm looking at some of these fabulous churches from the 30s and stuff. They took us on a tour that these black people built. Some very well ornamented, and the structures were sound and solid. I said, we don't build anything anymore. Nobody interested in learning skills. Nobody interested in learning carpentry, plumbing, electrician. You know, I mean, it's real sad that we have such a disconnect with manufacturing and building. You know, and I said, if we don't get it together, we're going to be exterminated. I mean, I say in America, we maybe got 50 more years. In Africa, maybe 75 to 100. But if we don't get control of our economy, that is it. It is over with. Every time I look at a black neighborhood, I think when I was in the military, and whenever I used to read a lot of military history, every time I noticed when a nation confronts another nation, when they battle and beat another nation, in other words, conquer it, you always have this dearth of this particular demographic group, and that are the males between 18 and 35. There's always that dearth. That's the warrior age of males. In every black community you go in, you always see an absence of that particular age group. That's the age group of your builders. That's when you're at your most dynamic, your most creative, your strongest, your physically strongest, supposed to be your mentally strongest. It's that particular age group, and they're always missing. And now there's even worse than that. They're not only missing, but the ones that's left are very unskilled and effeminate.
They're unskilled. They're unmotivated. They're narcotized. I mean, I can't tell you how many black males I've had from Africa on my friends list on all the social networks, on YouTube and whatever. And these Negroes are just a African caricature of the nonsense that you see in Best-Buy. They're just a caricature of it. They're not trying to be different in any way. They talk about the same garbage. They deal in the same mess. They're all trying to be these homo thug Negroes only over there in Africa. They're not trying to build anything. And nobody wants to hear the truth about that. They want me to up here and lie and tell you that, oh, it's okay. This is just minor. No, it's not okay. And it's not minor. This is not minor at all. This is serious business. And it's not a joke.
Well, take this quote. I'm going to make this short. I'm going to go. But to take this quote from this brother on Facebook, he said, we need something drastic. Maybe, he said, we need a tyrant. We need a tyrant with the ruthlessness of Stalin, the pragmatism of Mao, and the nationalistic vision of Marcus Garvey. He said, every time you find a people, and if you look at world history, you find a people that's lost, confused, directionless. Always in the dark times, there's always a tyrant arises. And even though his methods are brutal, draconian, and barbaric, when those people emerge from that, they tend to become a greater people, like Mao in China, like Stalin in Russia, or whatever. I don't know. But it looks to me that we are repeating that particular pattern. Hey, thank you for this program, brother.
Thank you very much for checking us, brother. We appreciate your telephone call here. Caller from the 678, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First Brothers, Draco Black.
Draco, what's on your mind, brother?
That's why I'll piggyback on what the brother earlier just said right now. What he said was really profound and insightful, and one thing I kept hearing over and over again was, what makes African countries a failure? First of all, we have to stop assuming they're independent nations. If you don't own your own economy, you're not a nation. If you're not loyal to your people, you're not a nation. These are mostly a bunch of puppets. Most of them, you know, they come from countries that are poor, economically wise anyways, but how are they able to afford college degrees from Harvard, the Sorbonne in Paris, or Oxford, and come back and
because
rule their country?
Because that's where their wealth goes. Because that is where their wealth goes. That is where all their financial achievement goes. They take, just like us to America, how can you be the poor people in America and yet you've got the most expensive sneakers? How in the world does that happen? The white folk don't have shoes as expensive as yours. That's because white people make the shoes that they sold us for the $200. Meanwhile, we gave Harvard $45,000 to get this degree that we can't blow our nose with because we do not have any power, wealth, resources to assure us gainful employment and economic advantage with that degree. Now, what you said before about they're not independent nations, I'd like to invert that because you're saying that they're neither independent nor nations. I think that's a very good way of speaking it. Even though you didn't say it exactly like that, that's basically what you're getting at is that we can't call them independent nations because they are neither independent nor nations. I agree with that. We call them nations simply because that's what the world governments say. They technically identify and qualify as nations. They fit the textbook definition. But if you do not
have
control of your resources, they fit the dictionary definition of a nation. But beyond that, they have nothing in common with everybody else. Your culture is not yours because you aspire to Europeans. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about wearing hair beads. When you've got black men who are not taking care of black females and knocking themselves over to bring in the Chinese, and they are on African soil, and there isn't a single white male on African soil, that's a problem. That's a problem of identity. That's a problem of sociology. That's a failure of a society. Drake, how does a woman in Africa raise her son, the daughters, how does a woman in Africa raise her son to idolize white women? All the African women walk around here, and you and I have both seen it. We've never seen black men smile as big as when they're with a non-black female in Africa. How does a woman raise her child to hate the female from which he was born?
I mean, there's no words to describe that sickness. It's not even just a sickness. It's just like, we're talking about the Arabs, for example, earlier. Yeah, they're notoriously cool for white women, but the difference is they'll never put a white woman above their women. They're like, yeah, I'll mess with you, but you're doing what I tell you to do. You're doing how I tell you to do it. You're going to convert to my religion, and you're not better than my woman. That's the difference. Intermixing can work for them because they put the code. Black men have no code. And they disrespect their women by default.
When a black an African man gets with a European woman, he sheds his Africanness.
Yep.
So by definition, there is no gain for him. He is trying to conform to her standards, not the other way around.
Exactly. A man should never conform to a woman. You can respect her, but you should never conform to her. But that's precisely what they do.
Well, but the women are no different, though, is the problem. You have an entire continent where they're fighting each other and slashing each other with scalpels to see who can sell out to the dominant societies, the Western culture first, and not just to Western thought, but to Western culture. It would be different if it was like Japan. In Japan,
right.
they dabble at the disco. Fads are a thing in Japan. They love their fads. They love intellectually masturbating other people's cultures. They don't adopt your culture. They are never
to
adopt your culture. They will play with it, but they're not going to adopt it. And Negroes in America don't know the difference between somebody playing with your culture and somebody adopting it.
You said enough on that perspective.
Japanese kids dancing to rap music, that playing with your culture. That mess that RZA did, the man with the iron fist, the Wu-Tang Clan, the Temples of Shaolin, that's adopting someone's culture. Rick Ross, Limousines for the Don, that's adopting someone's culture. It's not playing with it, that's adopting it.
It all goes back to the culture. It all goes back to that culture. Let me break something for you and your listeners. Most people have this idiocy that somehow Africans know their history. That's correction. Africans know their immediate history, their tribal, but very, very few of them know their actual ancient history. And not that makes a huge difference. Because if all you know is what you've been told, oh, we were just in the field and that's all you know. They don't know all the stuff about the great Monomopatapa and ancient Kemet and Ghana and so on and so forth. The fact of the matter is Africans have done the best politically wise when we have strong men. All of our great empires were under strong men. Democracy worked on the local level. There was a native form of democracy that worked on the village level. But as far as the overall state, the foreign policy, you need strong men. Africa has strong men equals strong nation, and vice versa, we see what's going on. So one thing that we can do here in America, in the diaspora, we can identify these people. Barack Obama, we should never give him cover. We can tell Africans, this guy's no good, he's getting subsidies, and we can raise hell in the media and say, you're a coon, because if they see that we're calling them out, Africans will listen to us. But we got to call them out. We can do that. Yeah.
European culture has survived and endured as it has because Europeans have institutionalized their culture. So I want to hold that back some because you're breathing this real hard. It's, I don't want people saying there's a cultural sexual move going on here. But Europeans have survived because they have institutionalized their values. They have institutionalized white supremacy. It's not, you can't find it today or trace it backtrack it to a person. There is no person today at the center of white supremacy. It's a system. There is no individual that you can assassinate and stop the white supremacist movement. That's how they remain strong. There is no individual that you could assassinate today and stop the white religion, the white culture, all those mechanisms. There is no person sitting at the apex of it that if we take him out, we'll be okay. It's not going to work that way. And we as black people need to understand you have to institutionalize it. That's why I was telling the caller before that our identity is what's important. Because if you are the people, if your identity is drawn back to the white folk here, no matter how much you try, you can't be an independent identity when you say that in the beginning we're white people. You can't say that I'm going to forge an independent black identity when you say in the beginning was Plymouth Rock. You can't do it. You'll never get there from here. And your children will never be able to get an independent identity because by definition, there is no independence. You are just institutionalizing what they, you people came from us. Your history starts with us. Your identity starts with us. And when you say that we're going to start here, then guess what? You're already a victim of it. So what we need to do is playing off your statement, we need a strong man. Yeah, but what we need, that strong man needs to not be a man per se. It needs to be us in our homes, forging African identity of us as a people and institutionalizing identity. I'm not telling you to shut down historically black colleges and universities, brothers and sisters. I'm not telling you to do that. What I'm saying is do what Dr. John Henry Clark told us to do. If you're going to have historically black, if you have historically black colleges and universities, then damn it, need to be black. And need to focus on blackness. Not some pseudo-religion, not some historical religious history. We elevate history to the level of a religion where it's never to be executed. It's just supposed to be something that you learn. You're supposed to learn your history so that it solidifies where you're going in the future. That's a black curriculum. If you're going to have universities that call themselves black, then damn it, be black. They'll at least be teaching one African language in there somewhere. If you say that we're going to have black communities, let's not just have black neighborhoods. Let's have real black communities. It needs to be institutionalized. Your schools, black empowerment to be institutionalized in your schools, institutionalized in your economy, institutionalized in your politics. That's why Dr. Claude Anderson said that you have a black person who goes to a city like New Orleans or Detroit or whatever and say this is a black city. I played for you all, for those of you who listened to me 4 years ago, I played the audio of Benjamin Netanyahu standing in the United States Congress just a few years ago. Standing in the United States Congress and saying, quote, Israel is a Jewish state and it will remain a Jewish state. And the United States Congress, standing ovation. Well, damn it, you bring Bill Clinton down here and you bring W. Bush down here and you bring Mitch McConnell down here and John Boehner. And you bring them to New Orleans and you say this is a black city and it will remain a black city. Thank you, Ray Nagin. But Chocolate City, I thank you for at least you went as far as you did. But understand something. Let's not be coy about blackness. The reason why other people are not giving us what we want is because we're not telling them what we want. And whoever that is behind is too loud.
Yeah, my apologies.
Black people, we are not getting what we want because we are not telling these people what we want. We are not telling them that we want black schools, black banks, black economy. We are not telling them what we want. We're telling them, well, you brought us Barack Obama. I guess I want a black president now without him actually doing anything for black people. And guess what you got? A black president who doesn't actually do anything for black people. We got exactly what we wanted. For gays, gays tell you exactly what they want. They want this television station. They want this show. They want marriage rights in your state. They want insurance rights. They tell you they want marriage rights for gays, insurance rights for gays. They don't say a damn thing about heterosexuals, do they? You're breathing in my ear again, brother.
Yeah. Not only do they say no against the heterosexuals, but one thing that they have is a code, and you've mentioned that many times. We need to have a code of conduct, and we have to take care of the coon drain. That's the one big thing we can do.
Very well stated. I'll let you have the last word.
Well, I mean, like I said, we have to enshrine our culture. There's a lot of people who already know about it, and that's John Henry Clark, and it was a shame that he had to die and die penniless. So for those of us who do black empowerment, we have to make sure we build an economy to support them so they can go ahead and change our minds permanently and get us back to where we need to be. Black first.
Black first, thank you very much for joining us here. See if we can grab a few more calls here before we go. Caller from the 646. You've been waiting for a while here. Thank you very much for your patience. You're on live with the Black Channel. Caller 646. Last try. You're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 646 is playing on my line. So caller from 646 will not be able to call back in. Caller from 708, you're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, everybody wants to play on the phone tonight here. If you're not on the line, caller from 708, I will have to see about getting you assistance. Caller from 708-829, you're live with the Black Channel. Okay. If anybody locates caller from 708-8974, phone is off the hook. If you see them strangling or being strangled or needing assistance, contact some other.
I do not have internet access. I'm just listening.
Okay, well, you should pay closer to your phone because you're kind of playing on it right now. And I'm not responsible for your lack of internet service. I'm really not. Well, Black Thor, why did you treat him like that? Because I expect black people to be a little more competent. Are you there, 708? Let me finish hitting this joint. Okay, finish hitting your joint. I'll see if I can get you some assistance. I'm not here to entertain you. Caller from 703, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yes, sir, my brother. How you doing?
Black first, brother. What's your name? Where are you coming from?
My name is Maurice Monte Mitchell, and I'm calling from Barron Springs, Michigan.
What's on your mind, brother?
A lot of things on my mind, brother. It's just one of the questions that I wanted to ask you. Why is it that any time a black man, and especially from an educational standpoint, why is it that every time a black man sits down and wants to do something for the black community in terms of unifying, and then there's another black man that sits there and tries to discourage what you're actually trying to do, because I've been, you know, trying to think of some actual plans and things like that. I mean, but why do you think that there is always, you know, conflict from blacks when blacks are trying to do something to improve blacks? I guess that's essentially what I'm asking.
Because black people are scared. Africans are scared. black as a race are frightened and cowardly and cringing in the corner. That's the reason why. In a nutshell, let's just make it very, very clear and very, very plain. Black people are a beaten and conquered people, and not just physically. They conquered us emotionally, mentally, psychologically, physiologically. We have been a beaten and humbled people who now no longer need to be told with ourselves in shackles. We behave as if we are in shackles, even though we don't have one on us. We have accepted the programming. Plain and simple, we have accepted programming that they gave us. We are not doing anything at all to try to stand up and behave as men. Let me explain to you what I mean by that. Because that question, that dovetails with something that I had said a little while ago here. A post I put up before when I had said that black people are just afraid. We're afraid of being rich. We're afraid of being poor. We're afraid of whites. We're afraid of Asians. We're afraid of dying. We're afraid of living. Black people as a group, Africans as a group, today are just afraid. We're just living and we're just afraid. While I say living, I should just say we're just existing. But that's all we're doing. We're just existing. We spend all of our time being terrified and frightened to death of anything and everything. This is why black men have no problem reciting lyrics from rappers who drive $300,000 cars.
Absolutely.
Black men listening will not lift finger to get one themselves, and they will physically fight you. They will physically fight you if you attempt to try to convince them. That's the reason why we are in the shit we are in today. That's why black people will fight each other and not fight white supremacy. Because can we be totally honest about it? White supremacy won. The war is over. The war has been over for a long time. White supremacy won. They won. And what we're doing today is trying to convince ourselves that no, there really wasn't a war in the first place. I'm telling you, there was. There was. People today, brother, are just scared. Afraid to death. And by the way, people, it's got nothing to do with slavery. Slavery wasn't eternity ago. That's not what fuels black people's fear today. Black people's fear today fueled by the fact that it's so much. I guess you can say that the roots came from slavery, but I'm not going to blame what your modern-day cowardice on something 160 years ago. The roots of the methodology of cowering black people are rooted in slavery and the slave trade and all the things that they perfected through the process. Black people are scared today of facing white people because we are afraid of looking bad.
Yes.
Black people are not afraid of dying. A black man will die to get some draws. Black men get killed, it seems, every week trying to sleep with some female they're not supposed to be with. Black men are not afraid of dying. Black men are afraid of dying for something that they do not understand. And they don't understand empowerment. That's for white folk. They don't understand living as human beings. They don't understand that. They do understand sleeping with Ushika, even if she's dating Ladarian. They do understand that. They can wrap their minds around that. Investing and making money can't wrap their minds around that. And it scares them. It scares them because they don't actually believe that they are worth. Let me say this again. They don't believe they even have the self-worth to challenge somebody like Bill Gates, Ellison, the Bronfmans. Black people do not feel that they have the self-worth. They feel that those people are worth the money and the esteem that they get. We as black people, man, we ain't worth all that. That's white folk. They're worth all that celebration and statues made of them. We're Negro. We don't rate all that, man. We're just simple working folk. That's us, man. It's their job to run the society. It's our job to work trenches, okay? Don't get twisted. It's their job to run this thing. It's our job to shovel coal. Black people. And if we try something else, man, what if it fails? Black men in particular are scared of two things. We are afraid of, but even more, we're afraid of success. Black men are afraid of actually succeeding. Don't believe me? Go find a guy who's on child support and try to get him to make $1 million. Try it. See what happens. What's the first thing he's going to tell you? I ain't giving that Wayne half my money. I ain't giving that Wayne 10%, 25%. He is more concerned with being comfortable where he is than having freedom. And when I just showed that, he's afraid of success. If I am successful, then more will be required of me. Now, Will Smith didn't sit up here and let that be his excuse. And part of the reason he's so close to his son is what? We don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but his son will be instrumental in making sure his mama ain't wasting the damn child support money. You've heard a lot about Will with son. How much about Jaden with his mama? You see, Will wasn't afraid of success. Okay, she can get that $200,000 a year. In a few years, that boy is going to be old enough to decide which one of us he wants to live with. Oh, see, she was playing the short-term game. See, if I had a gold-digging-ass ex-wife, I'd have played it just like that. I'd have played it just like that. You get that wench the biggest damn house, I would buy that heifer a Bentley. I would buy that witch one. Hell, forget Bentley, buy her a Bugatti. Forget Bentley, get the Bugatti. With a $100,000 a year upkeep on it. Get her a big-ass house. Make sure that damn thing is in her name and her name only. Not mine, not my children's. Her name only. In 5 years, she will lose all of it. She'll be sitting there owing $1 million in taxes. Because guess what, Wayne? In your name. And that car, the maintenance is your name. No, I am not buying you another one. You bought me this expensive-ass car that I can't afford to upkeep or nothing. Oh, well, them's the brakes.
Right.
So you sold out your whole damn life for $3 million. Will Smith's counting, what, 150th point? Please.
Right.
Please. Plus the sun is with me. Dude, it don't get no better. Plain and simple, it don't get no better than that. Even if it's got to go down like that, but black men will prefer to stay in poverty if it means nothing more is asked of them. Now you know what I mean by black men are afraid of the failure, but they're even more afraid of success. I just give an example of black men who should be breaking their necks to get their finances together, and they'd rather stay at the bottom. They are less afraid of being a failure than are of being a success. And we can go through other examples if you want to. We can go through others.
Okay.
That's far from the only one.
That's a very brilliant. Thank you for outlining those main points. And one of the things that I wanted to mention, brother, is I have had multiple family members that were in a BP party. You know, education was really instilled into me as well. But one of the things that is my actual burden, and I'm sure it's your actual burden too, is that we need to start taking a stand in our actual communities and stop being scared and stop being, you know, cowardice and actually have a mind of our own and stop listening to this centralized system. It's just that, I mean, we really got to take these things seriously, and I see that you're very passionate about this. I was on the Twitter, and I read an actual post of this young lady. She said that Nicki Minaj contributed more to black society than Martin Luther King. So,
well, I think that woman in particular is an entertainer. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Back and check on her again. I think that particular woman in particular is an entertainer.
Yes.
But what I'm more concerned about, I'm more concerned about the fact that we as black people, as I explained before to Dre and Kendra Lamar, I'm more concerned about the fact that we as black people are not challenging the structures that created Nicki Minaj. As I explained to you all, Nicki Minaj wanted to be an actress. They put words in her mouth, she performs them. Why? Because that's what they gave her. Nicki Minaj wanted to be an actress. Black men didn't have nothing to offer, so she was relegated to going. And I'm going to get into that here in just a few moments, too, because I want to talk about camera equipment. So I'm going to get to that here in just a few moments. So for those of you, I might start making, like, the last hour of program to start being more about specifics and mechanics, you know, and about equipment. They're going to start doing that because that's what I want to get into. But I'm more concerned about what are we doing to create infrastructures that can challenge these, because Nicki Minaj was created by white men. They give her the song, they give her the videos, they give her the outfits. She was constructed. She is an actress who is masquerading as a rapper, completely built and constructed, and I mean that literally. Who do you think gave her them butt implants and the breast implants? If that's not constructing somebody to an image, I don't know what the hell is. They went all out with that heifer, and they've been reaping the benefits ever since. I'm not hating on them for doing it. What I'm saying is, where's the black contribution? Black men are out there paying for all, picking off all their damn money, paying for all kinds of stuff for females, and have what to show for it? Have what? Have what? And I'm telling you right now, as a young man, 22, 23 years old, I was one of them. I can talk about black men trading off their money for stupidity because I was one of them. I've told you all the stories before. I was one of them. And that's how I know the mess is stupid. Because I've been there. Now, if you're dumb enough that you need to go waste a couple of $100,000 to find out what I already know, A, it's like the old saying goes, a wise man learns from the mistakes of others. A fool learns from his own. So I'm less concerned about her and much more concerned about the powers behind her. What are we as black people and black men doing to challenge those powers behind her? What are we doing?
Right.
That's the real question. What are we doing? I'll let you out of this word.
All right. Black men, we have to really take a stand, really take responsibility for our communities, and we honestly need to stop being cowards. That's all I wanted to say. God bless you, sir, and your actual passion. What's your name again, brother?
You can call me the Black Authority.
Okay, all right. Black Authority. All right, brother. You have a blessed one now.
Let's see. I'm going to try to take one more call here if I can, because I really want to get into some of this technical stuff here. I really want to talk about that. Caller from 904, you're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 904, your evening is over early. Caller from 239, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello.
Hi, you're on live with the Black Channel.
I'm just listening.
Okay, sounds like you're in the hot tub. Did we interrupt you while you were taking a bubble bath?
No.
It sounds like you're having a Calgon take me away moment with some cocoa butter, so I just wanted to make sure. She said that low and slow. Yes, I'm just listening. Really? You're getting a lot more on my broadcast than anybody else is right now, let me tell you. I guess that's a good thing. Okay, well, since nobody wants to talk to me, I want to go ahead and talk about a couple of other things here. I was just speaking about Nicki Minaj earlier. I want to ask you a question, brothers and sisters. Do you know what resources are? I want to ask you that. Somebody. Anybody. Do you know what resources are? You might be telling yourself that resources are all physical. Gold, silver, oil, but the other things that are resources also. The ability to perform work, that can be a resource also. Your intellectual capabilities, that's a resource also. Your creative faculties, that's a resource also. And how well you understand things, because you have to be able to understand things in order for it to, in order for things to work for you. You have to be able to understand them in order to be able to innovate and master something. You have to be able to do that. Why is Nicki Minaj here today? Nicki Minaj is here today because black men as a group didn't offer anything else. But TBA, yes. What about Brian Birdman Williams? If you believe that Brian Birdman Williams is the person behind Nicki Minaj, you are as dumb as you sound. If you believe that Brian Birdman Williams is the person behind Nicki Minaj, you are totally missing the point. As black men, and I'm speaking to the men in particular, our biggest obstacle is us. We are the only thing standing in our way. Just us. Not a bunch of other people. We are the only thing standing in our own way. If we would start pushing ourselves and doing what we're truly capable of, it would happen. It would happen. If you don't like Nicki Minaj, tell me, why is it you haven't made a counter Nicki Minaj? You see, if I was a white man and I was sitting here saying this, everybody would be on board for it. Everybody would be on board for it. Everybody would be breaking their necks to do it. Because, you see, when white men told you, hey, that's pretty cool, but you bounce a basketball, black men said, hey, bouncing a basketball is pretty cool. But do you know what white men never told you was cool? White men said that you show and play for a basketball team. That was what told you. But did you notice that they never mentioned to you that you should own one of those basketball teams? Did you notice they never made that cool to do? They never made owning a basketball team a social status symbol. They never said that. The things that will create power, wealth, and benefits and influence, they're not going to make those cool for you. My question, my thing to you is that nobody should be making it cool for you. You should already have that. Everybody wants to talk about Game of Thrones. College just has told you that he's done a novel about Liberia, about our people, about our experience. If we're going to talk about our history, why are we not getting the full benefits of it? How many of you here, I'm assuming you're old enough to remember, but then again, a lot of you young people have found out about it too. How many of you remember The Last Dragon? I'm talking about that Barry Gordy movie, The Last Dragon, with the star of the movie was supposed to be Bruce Leroy, but over time, may he rest in peace, the most notable figure has become Shonuff, the Shogun of Harlem. How many of you have seen The Last Dragon? I'll give you a few moments to respond on that. If you have seen The Last Dragon with Bruce Leroy and Shonuff, that was a Berry Gordy movie, for those of you who remember Berry Gordy and Motown. That's right. Berry Gordy went from music to movies. Yes, that's right. Before he sold Motown, that is, of course. I have a question for all of you out there. Do you know how much it cost to make The Last Dragon? I want to make this a project for all of you out there. Do you know how much it cost to make Last Dragon, what the budget was for The Last Dragon? I want you to all go look that up yourselves. Go and see if you can find what the budget was for The Last Dragon. And the reason why I'm asking you to do that is because HBO spends about $4 million, although for this season that they're doing now, they may actually be spending more than that of Game of Thrones per episode. And I'm here to tell you that you could remake The Last Dragon in full high definition for a fraction of that. Why is it that you don't have more images out there that are saying what you want them to say? That's because you don't actually have anything to say yet. You've got complaints about what they are saying, but you don't actually have anything to say yet. We have so many options out there right now, from the Canon 5D to the Panasonic GH4 that's coming out, to the Blackmagic 4K cinema camera, to the Nikon D7000. We can go down the list. We really can. We don't even have to. It doesn't even cost film. Do you know how many motion pictures never got to theater because the guys who shot the movies couldn't afford to get the film processed? Do you all know how many low-budget movies have never made it to theater because the guys who shot the movie had enough money to buy the film but could not afford the processing of the film? Today, with our digital landscape, you don't need film anymore. The Amazing Spider-Man movies, those were not shot on film. Those are shot with the Red. Hell, you can go to Red website and they list the movies for you. The Book of Eli, you can go down the list. All of your big budget movies, Avatar 2 and 3, are being shot with the Red. Pirates of the Caribbean. Which Pirates of the Caribbean? All of them. All of them were shot with the Red, a digital camera. No film, processing, post-production, color correction. They were not shot with film. They were not. Issa Rae, what I don't approve of, but I don't have a whole lot bad to say about her. I don't have a whole lot bad to say about Issa Rae at all. Because if she didn't get up and do it, where are the black men getting up and doing it? Where are other black people? I had some thoughts about those women sitting around that table, but to be totally honest with you, my final verdict on them is, well done, ladies. Because without you, there wouldn't be anything out there at all. Issa Rae knows nothing about digital cameras. Nothing. Nothing. But did she let that stop her from making videos? No. She got together with a white guy who does know how to use the cameras and went from there. Where are the black men? Where are they? Where are we to tell our stories? Where are we? Black men are not doing it. We're not doing it. Where are black people do it? You've got the means. You've got the means, definitely. Years ago, and I'll say it again, do you all remember that Akon video? Well, I Want to Love You. Let's just say it like that. Remember Akon had a video, I Want to Love You, with Snoop Dogg. Have you all gone back to go look at that video? 10 years later, have you gone back to go look at that video? There was nothing, absolutely nothing that they did in that video. I could recreate that video shot for shot, full resolution with a Canon 5D. I could recreate the video shot for shot, picture for picture, pixel for pixel with a Canon 5D. I dare anybody to say they couldn't do it. You could recreate that video with a DSLR camera. I don't care how much they spent on that camera they've used. I'm telling you, you could do it with a camera that's a fraction of the cost. What is the excuse? What is your reason for not doing it? What are you waiting for? No, people don't like broadcasts like this. You don't like me when I talk like this because you want somebody to sit up and tell you that you got plenty of excuses. You don't want somebody who sits here and tells you line for line, product for product, article, item for item, how much it costs to get them. You don't want that because you still want the ability to pretend that you can't do it. You still want the ability to say, TBA, I can't do it. Oh, it's too much. It's too expensive. But Instagram is filled to bursting with your selfies. Instagram is blowing up and exploding at the seams with your selfies. Can't get away from those. You want somebody else to step in and do it for you. You are just scared. And that's what turns you into 21st century gigaboons. Because we're afraid. But they'll complain about Nicki Minaj, won't they? Oh, they'll complain about her until the cows come home. Boy, they will just... Man, we're not concerned about no Nicki Minaj, man. No. We'll complain about that. But you will not challenge her. And you will not challenge the men behind her. You will complain about awkward black girl, but you will offer no submission of your own. I hear black men complain all the time about ghetto gaggers. That's white men slapping you in the face and literally spitting in your faces. Literally. Literally. Why is it that black men don't have a version of that? Because black men would never spend the money, and the white boys know it. They know you would never do it. Never. Never. Russell Simmons gets to sit here and desecrate Comedy Jam. Where are the black men to get together with some of these upcoming young black comedians and say, hey, let's put together a DVD of what you're doing. Let's put together something like that. Let's do that instead. Where are they? Where are they? Simple questions here. Those are resources too, brothers. And whether it's in Africa or America, you do not see black men gaining a hold of the resources. You don't see the black men exploiting the resources. Black men are being exploited. You don't see black men exploiting the resources. Just offering up endless complaints about the people who are exploiting the resources that they are doing. That's why I don't have any respect for hearing the excuses, because I want to know, what did you do? Explain to me exactly what was it you did? Because I don't see it. And too many people want us to keep giving them a pass. No more passes. No more passes. I'm working on a documentary. How many other people are out there working on something similar? And it doesn't have to be a documentary. How many of you are actually doing something to gain control of the resources, intellectual, physical, or otherwise? What are you doing? Because I'm telling you that every person who does not teach, who wastes the money and resources that they had, is committing treason against their children. And every person who has children and does not leave them power and assets has committed treason against their children. And every black person who is not doing something to acquire power, wealth, and influence is committing treason against our people. You have the means. I've listed them forever. You have the means. Why are you not doing something with it? Because understand, Africa does not believe in Pan-Africanism. They don't. What do they call the Nigerian movie industry? What they call it? They call it Nollywood. That's right. They're not even looking to themselves for the inspiration for their own movies. They are all the way over there. Population is less than 2%, but the real Hollywood is on the other side of the world, but they are looking to white people. Question everybody, for those of you who wanted to dispute what I said before, how soon do you all think that the Sollywood is coming? You know, the Saudi Arabian Hollywood. Could you ever imagine Arabians calling their movie industry Sollywood? Could you ever dream of something like that happening? Could you ever imagine the Arab sitting around and waiting to gain their inspiration for what they are doing? Westerners? That's what I mean by the Arabs just wanted their money. They don't want your culture. They got their own. They don't want to make movies about what it's like to be Arab in America. They want to make movies about what it's like to be Arab in Arabia. Africans make movies about, if you go check out Nollywood, you go take a look at their stuff. It just looks like low-grade porn. That's right. Nigerian movies look like low-grade porn, complete with the sex scenes, as a matter of fact. Their garbage is utterly unwatchable. They say that they're Nigerians, but they act more like Americans. No culture whatsoever. No Africanness whatsoever. They looked at American movies. They're just trying to make their own version of American movies. That's all. That's all. No wonder your children are not inspired to make movies of their own. Why should they? You told them that we're just going to be knockoff white folk. Well, why should they make, they come see your movies? Hell, just making knockoff white folks movies, and not very good ones at that. You aren't even doing a good knockoff. Why should we pay money for your crap? Let's just go and get the white folks movies. Why should we pay for your low-grade knockoff garbage? We can go get the real thing. Why should we get Captain Africa when we can go get Captain America? Because Captain Africa is wearing red, white, and blue and stars and stripes. Why should we? Why should we? If Pan-Africanism is to be, it's up to black Americans. We talk about Pan-Africanism. But Pan-Africanism, I am sad to say, is not, never has been, and never has a chance of ever being, originating in Africa. It is only going to come from America. Marcus Garvey was the prophet of Pan-Africanism. As far from Africa as a person could get. Africans do not care about Pan-Africanism. It is going to be up to the rest of us to educate them. As I've always said, it is going to be up to the rest of us to educate them about what being black means, what being an African means. The idea that Pan-Africanism, in its present form, is in some way originating from Africa, that is the great lie of Pan-Africanism. That is the great lie of it. We as Africans today, whether we be Africans in America or Africans in Africa, we as Africans today are going to have to realize that our place and our position as Africans must come first, but that's never going to happen if we do not codify that identity. Remember, we need a common code, a common step. We need a common identity. And what that means is that we, as black people in America, going out from here, it's time for an intellectual counteroffensive. All we want to talk about is how the Europeans have been flooding the intellectual marketplace with their images. Well, damn it, it's time for us to flood it. It's time for us to get into the fight. It's time for us to do it now. It's our turn to define what Pan-Africanism is and why it's important, why it is the most important thing. That's our job now. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. We'll be returning here tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Central Time, same black time, same black channel. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future is uncompromising.